Welcome to Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome, welcome, welcome. We have made it to another evening. And the brokers aren't on the ledges yet. Not that they ever will be. But we still have to wonder what's going to happen to the real part of this country. Not the hummingbird tongue-eating crowd. Because if you were just listening to Mark Levine, and if you weren't, why weren't you? You would have learned, you would have gotten a very, very much needed little primer on the situation as it now stands. And Mark's historical look back to the position that Jimmy Carter took with regard to Chrysler is exactly what was needed. I don't know if the folks in Congress just don't remember that sort of thing, or if it's just an inconvenient memory. But it was badly needed. Indeed. I echo Mark's question. What's wrong with loaning these people the money? You know, we don't even have to hang consumer style interest. We won't ask Wall Street to pay under the same terms that we have to pay Wall Street. You know, where the payment doubles and you get hit with a humongous late fee and surcharges on top, and if you're 15 seconds late on the credit card bill. We won't ask them to do that. If we got to do this, make it a nice, friendly little loan. For me, that seems to make an abundance of good sense. And there is a boatload of stuff to talk about this evening, but it isn't just any old ordinary evening. No, it's the middle of the week. It is Wednesday, friends and neighbors. That means it's prayer meeting time. Yep. Oh, choir master.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah!
Hallelujah!
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity, yeah. Whoever never said religion should be free.
Hallelujah. Come on down the blood-red carpet and lay your hands upon the subwoofers here in Brother Bob's Cathedral of Common Sense and feel the healing rays rolling through you. Ha! Glory! It is prayer meeting night at Head On, and I've got a little reminder for you. If everything else goes bust, remember the opening lines, and it's all tax-free in that song, and it's all tax-free. Remember that? Pay attention to that. Because you know what? There's one sector of our society out there that is not in the least tiny little bit sweating Wall Street's travails. Now, last night, and the night before, for that matter, I've been asking a question. And I'll ask it again, and you're free to envision it. What does an America look like in which the markets have completely melted down? What does a post-crash America look like? All right? And we've had some answers. We've had some thought put into that. Juanita reminded us last night of some of the stories that her father used to pass along to the family of what life was like when he went through the Great Depression. And I didn't get to it last night. But we also had an answer put forth from our buddy William out in L.A. He said, Bob, it's when, not if, the economy collapses. Let that sink in. It's when and not if. And all the information does, in fact, point to that fact. It was George Santayana who said, those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And he was a pretty smart fella. Because we've been to this movie before. And you know what? It doesn't end well. This has been done before. In another email, it was pointed out to me that apparently Tom Hartman has been talking about this at some length, talking about the attempt to save Wall Street back in 1931 from the very same excesses that are cursing us and gnawing away at our financial bones in 2008. And as they did it, they tried it in 1931, and it didn't work. And it didn't work for the same reasons that it won't work now. And hence William's statement that it is when and not if the economy collapses. William says, I live in a city in Los Angeles where there appears to be nothing wrong unless one is a mind reader. But if this does happen, what I do see will not be road rage, but rage and desperation of a different kind. It's difficult to imagine stopped traffic and abandoned cars with empty fuel tanks and stores empty of all food with broken windows and homes vacated because once out in the street in search of a direction to walk off into, holding a shade of hope, standing among thousands, that the direction you choose is the one that holds a tree with a few grapes hanging off a vine. William says, and then what? And it's the then what part. It's the then what part that we have to with which we have to concern ourselves. And that's a really big then what. It's mind-boggling. And the fact of the matter is, what needs to happen, as I've said, is the protection of the people who were forced into the market. If you didn't go into the market voluntarily, if your pension funds or your 401k are there because that's where you were shunted to, if you can't do anything about it because of requirements and restrictions on your accounts, those are the people the government needs to cover. A guy with $22 million does not need another $2 million or $5 or $10. But the aching people in America who are sitting and sweating this out, they're the ones who need the relief. And it seems that they're the ones that we're talking the least about. And it astonishes me. It simply astonishes me. I want to share something with you that just rolled into the email. And we will talk about other things here shortly. We'll talk about the great debate stratagem. Well, I guess obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. Is it safe to say that John McHoover, John McCrash, as our buddy David in South Carolina refers to him, is it safe to say that John McCrash has pulled a Kobayashi Maru with regard to this debate on Friday? For those of you not conversant with the Star Trek lexicon, what we're talking about is the situation in which it was a no-win situation, I guess, at Starfleet Academy that every MIDI had to go through, or cadet, or whatever they were called. And it was a no-win situation. It was unwinnable. James Kirk was the only one who ever managed to win the Kobayashi Maru. But he did so by cheating. He did so by fooling with the program so that he could have a positive outcome that no one else could have. You know, in many ways, that sounds a hell of a lot like John McHoover, McCrash, McSame, McBush. That sounds an awful lot like him. Lots of POWs sweated and suffered in captivity during the Vietnam War. Lots of them. It's safe to say that the number might even be only one who came home and walked out on the wife. Well, yeah, I think if you frame it the right way, it is down to just one. There's only one POW who came home from Vietnam, walked out on the wife, who through agony, surgery, and a horrible car accident had waited for his return in silence so as not to worry him, bugs out on her, and goes and marries a former beauty pageant winning beer heiress. There's only one of those. And that, I submit to you. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know where I'm going. And now, by refusing to debate on Friday, John McCain has hoped to pull a Kobayashi Maru, because he was damned if he did and damned if he didn't on Friday. He didn't have a snowball's chance in hell of scoring even. He couldn't even get, you know, one of those the tie scores that comes from the judges. God knows it was no knockout for him, but he ran the real risk of having the knockout punch laid at, you know, the big old left hook come from Barack Obama, and down goes McCain. Down goes McCain. You know what I mean? But out of all of this, you know, there are some politicians, there are some elected representatives who are saying some sane things. But let me offer something that sounds really downright, there's that word, presidential. How to recover this country, how to put this country into a full-scale recovery. One, health care for all. Insurance companies make money not providing health care. Millions of Americans want health care that is accessible and affordable, and that could be had under H.R. 676, the Medicare for All Act. By passing and enacting Medicare for All, businesses, large and small, will be able to create jobs and save the jobs of thousands of people, not the least of whom doctors, nurses, other health care workers, who are leaving the field because the insurance companies are making it impossible to practice with any degree of compassion or competence. Number two, prescription drug benefit for seniors. The MEDS Act. fully paid prescription drug benefit. Fully paid. Not this hocus pocus that was foisted on us in the first term of the Bush administration. Three, and price gouging by the oil companies. Windfall profits tax and the revenues go into tax credits for the purchase of fuel-efficient American-made cars. Wow. Number four, protect the American homestead. And the manipulation of mortgage markets. And make sure that the neighborhoods with the highest number of foreclosures get the most help. Number five, jobs for all. H.R. 3400, rebuilding America's infrastructure. Creates millions of good-paying new jobs rebuilding roads, bridges, water systems, and sewer systems. Number six, a complete revamping of American manufacturing policy. There's something coming called the American Manufacturing Policy Act, the AMPA. It will make priority the maintenance of U.S. steel, automotive, and aerospace industries and declare them vital to our national economic security, and that they must be maintained through integrated public-private cooperation, new trade policies, and investment. Number seven, and I like this. I like this. This smacks of FDR. All of this does. The Works Green Administration. A New Deal Green Jobs Program. By which the government, you know, we the people, us, help create millions of jobs by facilitating design, engineering, manufacturing, distribution, and maintenance of millions of wind and solar microtechnologies for millions of homes and businesses. Fair trade goes without saying. A full repeal of NAFTA. Number nine, education for all, including H.R. 4060, a universal pre-kindergarten program to ensure that all children ages 3 to 5 have access to full-day quality daycare because their parents have to work 2 and 3 and 4 jobs to participate in the uniquely American the Bush economic miracle. Number 10, protecting pensions. Reform bankruptcy laws so pensioners' claims will be first ahead of banks, and that corporate executives who misuse workers' pension funds are subject to criminal penalties. And fully funding the Pension Benefit Guarantee Board. Protect Social Security, number 11. Number 12, protect bank deposits. Making sure that the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation has sufficient funds is solvent enough to provide for the insurance of deposits up to $200,000 at all banks and savings and loans. Number 13, protect investors. Re-regulate Wall Street because deregulation got us in this mess. 14, strength through peace. Bring the troops home, end the occupation, refocus on diplomacy, cut the Pentagon budget, and end the participation of the likes of Blackwater and Halliburton in the Pentagon budget. Where did that come from? No, I didn't just sit down and write that. No. It came from probably the single most presidential man in the political process today. It came from Dennis Kucinich. You know, might be kind of nice, not to say that if maybe Barack Obama went and had some lunch with Dennis. It might be a good idea indeed. Because Wall Street is not the focus of this problem. Main Street is the focus of this problem. And Main Street is the focus of this problem not because Main Street caused the problem, but because Main Street is being massacred by Wall Street. What did Warren Buffett say? Oh yeah, there's a class war. And my class is winning. There aren't going to be any losers with or without the bailout. There won't be any losers on Wall Street. Please, please, please come to that understanding. Wall Street will not lose. Because they will not be allowed to lose. But this is perfect. This is perfect. I've been talking for two nights about a flank attack. We got flanked. Anybody with a half a brain, and that includes Sarah Palin. Okay, a third of a brain. And that includes John McCain. Can see the handwriting on the wall. There is a distinct possibility that Barack Obama will be the next president, that he will put his hand not on a Quran, you right-wing idiots, but on the Bible on January 20th, 2009, and he will take the oath of office as the president of these United States, this republic, this, and I know Republicans hate to say the word, union. And so what is going on right now is purely and simply an effort to make sure that none of the things that I just talked about in that list from Dennis Kucinich, some of which Barack Obama has talked about as well, that none of that can be accomplished. Because you see, if these programs are tried and succeed, the Republican Party is dead forever. What we're looking at here in mid to late September 2008 is what the Germans did in December 1944. This is the last desperate offensive to avoid their own destruction. If you can get your friends, your neighbors, your relatives, people you don't know, your communities, if you can get them to go to the polls and vote for Barack Obama, we can begin to heal this nation. Perhaps not in the degree that you and I and other significant, serious liberals and progressives would like, but we can at least begin to try. And if we do that, the Republican Party dies forever. We can get the wooden stake, we can drive it through its filthy, demonic heart, we can absolutely cover it in garlic and crosses and watch its hateful, withered old flesh dissolve before our very eyes like a snail covered in salt on a sidewalk. That's why this is happening. Oh, for the love of God, you know that, don't you? I'm not trying to insult your intelligence, but please, you do recognize that, don't you? This is the last desperate stand of a desperate party that can feel the death rails rattling in its lungs. The only way the Republican Party can survive is by killing America. That's why I use the vampire analogy. Vampires, according to myth, only survive by sucking out the life force of the living to perpetuate the existence of the undead. That is where we are. And if, to extend the analogy, by some hellish nightmare, John McBush, John McSame, John McHoover, John McCrash should become president of the United States, we, the people of the United States, become Renfields. How you liking them bugs? That's as plainly and as simply as I can put it. Does this make sense to you? It makes Of course, that's the way it is inside an addled mind like mine. It makes perfect sense to me. I can see it all just rolling out. And I mean, my God, I got this mighty proud press release today, just a little bit ago, from my congressman. Now, with all this business about a bailout going on, they are actually still doing some other business in Congress. Continuing his fight to better provide for West Virginia's troops and veterans, Congressman Nick Rahal voiced his support Wednesday for final passage of the Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2009, a bill that will strengthen our nation's military readiness and support American service members and their families. Having passed both the House and Senate, the bill will soon be sent to the President to be signed into law. What are the numbers? 2009 Defense Authorization Bill authorizes $8.6 billion for the Army, $1.8 billion for the Marine Corps, $800 million for the National Guard and Reserve to address critical shortfalls in their equipment needs. Oh, but that's not all. No. That's not for the troops in the field. Then there's the stuff supposedly for the troops in the field. An extra $1.7 billion for mine-resistant ambush-protected vehicles, MRAPs. You know, those aren't those the ones that are made in South Africa? And there's another $2.2 billion in there for the Joint Improvised Explosive Device Defeat Organization, JIED, which develops new technologies to better combat IEDs. Oh, this is a real candy gram to the Pentagon. That we have money for. The list of what we don't have money for, well, that's a considerably longer list. Of course, our buddy David in South Carolina says, I still say that with the Kobayashi Maru, I still say that Rove is behind this, John McCain's decision not to debate. I still say Rove is behind this. His tactic has always been to go after the opponent's strength. He wants to put Obama in a bind and give McCrash an opportunity to distance himself from Bush. Now McCrash wants to play hero. If this were me running Obama's campaign, I'd run some ads with McCrash celebrating his birthday with Bush and the birthday cake juxtaposed with bodies floating in New Orleans. Yeah, exactly. Thank you, David. I'd sort of reflected on that a little bit earlier myself. Now here's this dumbass, John McCain, old 894. The man who's actually stupider than George Bush. And all of a sudden he's going to run back to the Senate to deal with the financial crisis. Oh, glory! But during the meat of the financial crisis, he can't seem to find Washington, D.C. How long? I know Guy James has talked about this quite a bit. How long has it been since John McCain cast a vote in the Senate of the United States, and all of a sudden he's worried? All of a sudden he's got to get back to Washington and put aside our partisan differences and blah, 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 blah. I ain't buying. This is grandstanding, and this is an attempt to avoid the fate that awaits him in Oxpatch, Mississippi. Pure and simple. David goes on and says, how about some ads showing how many important votes McCrash has missed? This crisis suddenly explodes onto the scene about a month before the election. What date will the new Bin Laden tape be released? Oh, David's inside the game. The Republicans again show how much they disrespect this nation and the world. They make up fake emergencies while people starve and die for lack of care. This fake crisis is just like the imminent threat Iraq posed to the United States. How many times do they get to cry wolf? David says, let's just let them cry out. If it's a real wolf this time, maybe it'll devour them. This is a scam and a waste of precious time. Yeah, that picture of John, because that's what he did when New Orleans, you know, when it was brown people who were floating face down in the fetid, stinking backwaters of flooded New Orleans and hanging in trees from the hurricane passing over the Mississippi Gulf Coast, John McCain was cutting birthday cakes and playing with George Bush at a country club. But now that his Wall Street pals are in trouble, he's gonna hide behind their skirts to keep from dealing with what's coming to him. You know, I remember that ESPN. Remember those wonderful ESPN promos? There was one with Evander Holyfield and that guy who was with him, Charlie, can't remember Charlie's last name. But Evander Holyfield saying, he said, what about me? And then Evander Holyfield walking through the offices of ESPN saying, come on out, Charlie. Come on out and get your whooping. Come get your whooping, Charlie. Well, that's what's happening. That's what Oxpatch, Mississippi's all about. Come on out, McCain. Come on out. Come get your whooping, John. Your whooping's waiting for you. And John McCain said, my friends, I hear my mother calling in Washington. Exactly what it is. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, am I on?
You are.
Hey, this is Steppo down in Tennessee.
Good to hear from you.
Hey, I'm sorry. I know I haven't been around in a while, but in my own defense, my friends, I've been living in a little studio apartment with no internet access. I didn't have a table. I didn't have a chair. I did have a table, actually, a coffee table. I didn't have a kitchen table. I had a picnic table. It was out on the balcony. But my friends, you understand what I mean.
Yes.
I was calling to talk about this bailout bill. First of all, obviously, McCain and Bush are out there saying this shouldn't be a partisan issue. And that's obvious why they would say that. But I think this whole thing reeks of problem, reaction, solution. I think they're taking advantage of the fact that Americans are in such a panicked state of mind that they want to rush this through in the middle of the night before anybody can get a chance to read it, just like they did with the Patriot Act. I mean, they're saying, like, okay, you're so panicked that you'll accept any solution we dangle in front of you. And my guess is it probably contains a bunch of corporate welfare that's going to rob the taxpayers and pad the pockets of the robber barons. And, what's your take on that? I mean,
There's a larcenous. The Bush administration's proposing this. They're saying, we can't have partisanship here. But it was a partisan prepared and a partisan proposed piece of bailout legislation. So, you know, from right out of the gate, it's got to be just awash in hypocrisy. You can bet your last coffee table that when you hear this can't be partisan, that what they're talking about is a partisan deal. And you're right. The comparison to the Patriot Act is more than apt.
Right. They'll put this shit in the middle of the night if they have to. And I think the American people, they're panicked. But I think, you know, we're all invested in this now, and we want to know where our money's going.
It would be kind of nice, but I don't know if we can tell where the money's going. You know, you've
got. Of course, they want to push it through before the debates. That's why John McCain is saying, all right, this shouldn't affect the way you vote. That's why he bailed out of this debate. Because he has no argument.
Look, this is the October surprise. I don't know if that's dawned on anybody, but this is the October surprise. Granted, it came in September, but it still follows in line with the Rovian theory that you don't roll out new product in August.
Oh, I'm getting a beep here. I think my battery might be dying.
Oh, darn. Well,
just for fun. One of the reasons I've been away from politics for a few weeks is because when the Sarah Palin thing came up, I warned everybody, don't take the bait. It's a distraction. Keep your eye on the ball, folks. McCain. Okay? And all in chat rooms, everybody just wanted to talk about not just Sarah Palin, but just ridiculous stuff about, oh, well, maybe Sarah Palin's kid is actually Bristol's kid, and she's blah, blah, blah.
Oh, I'm guilty of that, too. Okay. Everybody, okay, it was too engaging not to. That's my only excuse.
Just for fun, remember when you did the story about the Family Research Council or whoever it was, when they did the story about Tyson Gay and they changed the word to homosexual?
Yes.
Okay, well, I did this with, you know, Sarah Palin says she doesn't like the nickname Barracuda. But apparently they're using it in their campaign, so apparently she does like it. And Hart issued a cease and desist order from them using that song.
Right.
But I went on Google, and I researched the reproductive habits of barracuda. And I replaced barracuda with Governor Palin. So before my phone dies, just for fun, would you like to hear
it? Oh, yeah, go for it.
Okay, here we go. Governor Palin's reproduction still remains unclear, but we know that the spawning takes place in spring. Its fertilized eggs are left with no care at all. It is a solitary fish and can be found in groups only when younger. Governor Palin may be a dangerous fish, especially when provoked. Its sharp, knife-like teeth have already caused a number of injuries to divers and swimmers. Governor Palin's meat can contain a poison, so it is dangerous to eat it. It is also illegal to sell this fish.
Oh, and we lost Seppo. But that's good. I love doing the global search and replace game, because sometimes it just works to a T. And there it is. In groups only when young. Well, we've seen the pictures now, haven't we? You know, the one with the, with the liquor bottle. Yeah, Captain Morgan's rum, wasn't it? Yeah, I think so. So, let's see what's happening here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there, Bob. Ben Birch.
Hey, Ben.
I did some tabulating here, just very, very roughly. As of right now, before we pass this bailout, the federal debt is standing around $9.8 trillion.
That's what I'd read.
Which is roughly double what it was 8 years ago.
Yeah, and 8 years ago we had the possibility of paying it almost down to zero, right?
Yeah, it was going down. We were talking about embarrassment of riches. You know, the peace dividend finally kicking in.
Yeah, that's when all that right wing giggling about lockboxes took place, right?
That's right, exactly. You know, they thought it was really silly that we were going to try to set some money aside for the future. So here we are. Now don't let anyone tell you that this bailout is 7/10 of a $1 trillion.
No.
It's more like $1.8 trillion. That is 1.8 million million dollars. So if we add that all together, we come up with something like $11.4 trillion being the total U.S. indebtedness.
Good God! That, you know, my mind can't do those numbers.
That's $26,000 for every man, woman, and child.
Jesus.
Do you have spare $26,000, Bob?
No, I remarked in an email earlier today that, you know, this has been the trip through the funhouse, and now it's I thought it was just $2,000 for every man, woman, and child. $2,000 ticket for this way to the egress.
Yeah, no. P.T. Barnum would have loved this because they've got us coming and going.
Well, let me ask you this, Ben, and I don't know if you know the answer or not, but if I understand, or to the extent of my understanding, the only thing that happens if they can infuse all this money and if they can keep Wall Street from going in the toilet, then the only protection that retirees and pensioners who were forced to play in this dummied-up game, the only protection they have is that their money is still on the table. Their money is still at hazard. Do I have that right?
That is exactly right. If all it does is stabilizes the current situation as it is.
Does it stabilize the currency? Because the currency's going for a swim, too.
No, actually, the currency is the value of the currency is ultimately decided by external factors. It is decided by the people who are in the currency markets abroad, and it is they who decide how much inflation this whole mess brings upon us by their willingness to buy and keep dollars. And in fact, you find right now the dollar is plummeting in value. And that is because what they are doing is inherently inflationary. And, you know, and what's worse, the only way I can see out of this current debt, the only way out of this debt with the current, you know, structure of the U.S. economy, that is to say we are entirely extractive, we manufacture nothing, we attempt to make all of our money by the manipulation of financial instruments rather than actual production of goods, you know, goods. The only way out of this is the way Weimar Germany took.
You want to kind of square that for me, please?
Monetization of the debt. We print money until we have paid the debt. Now, it doesn't have to be actual physical printing of money, because that's kind of passé and in the old days. You know, and what you do now is you manipulate the Federal Reserve Bank until you have inflated the money to the point where current revenues will actually be able to pay off the debt in a reasonable period of time. In order to do that, we have to accept a 40 or 50% annual rate of inflation for a few years.
What are you talking about, Willis?
I'm talking about Argentina.
Yeah, or what was the African nation that had 1,000,000% on inflation going, or inflation going? That's where I was going. If you infuse, if you just start printing money, and it's fiat money, isn't that what triggers inflation?
That is exactly what triggers inflation, and that is the only way we are going to get out of this debt crisis. And if we take this under, you know, if we start, you know, you understand we are in for a dollar, we are in for a dime on this thing. All right? If we start on this road, if we start this, we have to either continue to bail things out because things aren't going to get better, and there are going to be banks failing, and there are going to be institutions failing continually over the next 4 or 5 years. Either we continue to bail out every single time something like this happens, or we cut our losses at some point and let the collapse happen that would have happened anyway, and the only thing we have gained is extra debt.
But it seems, is it possible, or is the scale too high, is it possible that if these things collapse, is it possible to protect the people who were forced into the market involuntarily?
No. No, it's going to be an absolute complete loss for anyone who's in the market.
So something like an FDIC type situation can't be crafted that would say, you know, whatever the dollar value of your account is on day X is the dollar value you're insured for?
If we do that, again, we're printing money. The thing we have to do, the number one, you know, it's a fairly radical solution I'm going to suggest to you, and that is the only way we can possibly do this, the only way we can possibly get our way out of this is to go look where the money went and get it back from there. And that is to say, we must seize and nationalize the assets of the looters.
I don't have a problem with that. But then the question becomes one of, you know, it is, we do at least in theory live in a constitutionally based republic based on democratic principles, and there's stuff like due process out there. How do you identify the looters, and how long does it take to get the money back?
Well, I guess that really depends on how committed we are to having a completely constitutional process here.
I'm kind of finicky about the Constitution. Of course, you know that, Ben.
Yep, and so am I. In actual point of fact, what we can do is there are a variety of ways to do this where you basically trump up charges under various banking laws and use that for an asset seizure. And you can use the RICO.
Well, I was about to say, what about RICO?
Well, yeah, you can use RICO, and you can essentially say that all major beneficiaries of banks have been conspiring for this whole time, and you can acquire the money under the RICO law. Because you don't actually have to show that a group of people acting in the same way to produce the same ends literally conspired anymore. You have to show is that that they were in the same business doing the same thing.
Well, I tell you, I had hoped that it might be able to. We're smarter than this. We're smarter than this. Because the $700 billion bailout, you know, Ben, we neglect the meaning. We hear these things, bailout, cut and run, yada, yada, yada. All these little phrases that go into the popular lexicon for a period of time and then fade away. We forget what the actual meaning of the words are. Cut and run is actually a smart naval tactic. Bail out. If you're bailing in a rowboat with a leak in it, you're never gonna get ahead of the water you're sitting on.
That's right.
I mean, have I got it there? I mean, is that correct?
Once you start bailing, you gotta keep bailing. And that's exactly the situation that we are in. You know, we've not stopped the leak. We are just taking the temporary things necessary to keep it afloat.
If you pull all the metaphors into one pile, there's a certain amount of irony in that Repiglican claim of a few years back that a rising tide lifts all boats. Well, you know what? The rising tide can also drown all boaters. And that's what it looks like we're looking at.
That is exactly what we're looking at. I don't, honestly, at this point, I wish I had something optimistic to say. The collapse is inevitable. The question is, how are we going to take the collapse? Are we going to take the collapse by allowing the private sector of the economy to collapse, or are we going to take the collapse by allowing the nation itself to collapse? Okay? We have to take on the debt somehow. I really do hope that we can find a way to make the people who did this pay for it. But even if we do that, that's going to take years, as you say. There's going to be a collapse. There has to be a collapse. And the reason, this is very different from the collapse we suffered in 1931. Okay? You know, people think that the Depression started in 28. No, it really was 31 before it really got going. But the problem is, in 31, we still had manufacturing in this country. We still had, we were actually able to build our way out of that depression by serving the world's needs and producing goods and services, such that when Franklin Roosevelt came in and changed the way banking happened, so that there was suddenly, a sufficiency of money to permit manufacturing to occur again. We were able to manufacture our way out of this by producing goods. Now, however, we have almost no manufacturing base left in this country. The only things we actually produce that are physical are raw materials and agricultural products. And so we're reduced to the status of a second world nation.
Well, here in West Virginia, we kind of live that status every day, but that's beside the point of this, I guess.
So what we're going to have is the middle class is going to essentially vanish in this.
In other words, I'm correct. The Republicans get their dream.
They get their dream. And there's nothing we can do to stop it at this point in time. The only thing that we can really do is find some retribution against them.
It's a grim way to start the first hour, Ben.
Well, it's been and that's
that's the question I keep asking. What does, because if we don't imagine now what America looks like, then the imagining will be done for us.
Well, you know, I hate to bring up something that is that is a sort of a libertarian icon here. But you've read Atlas Shrugged.
Sadly, yes.
Well, you know that really dismal civilization she showed in which everything was falling apart?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's here. That's now.
Yeah, and but the one.
She was right about the looters, too, only the looters were all the people who thought she was wonderful.
Where she got it wrong, though, is what caused it.
Oh, yeah, she had the cause right. But it was caused by her followers.
Yeah, those were the ones who turned out to be the looters she referred to.
Yes, and they have looted everything. And the only thing we have left now is our land and ourselves. And we have to start from the beginning again. You know, we're going to be a poor nation after this, and there's nothing we can do about it. The only thing we can do.
Well, you know, it was pointed. Go ahead.
Only thing our power to do is to make sure we never ever elect a Republican for anything more than dog catcher.
Nah, I wouldn't trust him with that either, but that's me. But you know, it was pointed out to me by our listener Tosh, who listens a couple of days in delay. He's a podcast listener. That you can make a very strong historical argument that FDR's policy had pretty much succeeded, full success, by 1938.
Oh, yeah, it had.
And that it wasn't World War II that turned it around.
No, World War II delayed the recovery.
It can be fixed. You know, in other words, had World War II not happened, the economic blossoming of the Eisenhower era would have happened in the 40s instead of the 50s.
Yes. Now, the only real problem is, at the time, to get out of that mess, we had idle manufacturing capability here that we do not have now. Yes, all that was necessary was to hire the men and buy the materials and get the plants going again. That is no longer the case. We no longer have idle manufacturing capability in this country. We have not only shut down the plants, but we have exported all the machinery. The means of production have all been exported to other countries.
And really, Ben, this goes into the heart of the argument that so many of us have been making for such a long time, and the Republicans hate this word. God, they loathe it, Ben. Sustainability. The consumer culture that was envisioned in 1952 was not sustainable, and this is the proof of it. Now, on the other hand, when you take things like Dennis Kucinich is proposing that I read at the beginning of the program, things like a green initiative in America, where we start talking about green energy, green building practices, green transportation, green infrastructure, that'll put America back to work, similar to what happened under FDR's administration.
If we can find the money to do it, yes.
Yeah.
That's the real question. Can we somehow manage to find enough money to build our way out of this thing, or is it going to get so bad that rather than green, we go exactly the opposite way? We're all driving two-cycle mopeds, and our cities are all operated with, you know, pollution-choking, auto rickshaws.
Well,
and
I think
eating rice.
I think we see the direction that we've got to, you know, that we've got to try to push this in. We've got to try to innovate and build our way out.
Well, that's gonna. I'm just telling you that that's really far from certain at this point. I really hope that Senator Obama can work miracles. Because he's gonna need to.
He does indeed.
We've killed the goose.
Yeah,
the
right.
Old bank.
Yeah, yeah. And it was doing a good job too. Damn shame. Ben, right. Thank you very much. I appreciate the technical
care.
Specifics. Be well.
Take care. Bye.
Bye now. Okay, let's keep rolling on.
Hi there.
Hey, what's up?
Well, what's up is McCain is trying to get out of the debate.
Yeah, I touched on that briefly, but yeah.
Yeah. There is a little piece that I have now put up on FinTab. You can also find it up on HuffPo. In 1999, while the Republicans were going at it hammer and tong over repealing Glass-Steagall of all things, in other words, deregulating the banking industry.
Yeah.
Guess what John McCain was doing?
What's that?
Attending a debate.
Oh my! Help me here. I got lost.
He was debating while Graham negotiated the deregulation. So you can do more than one thing at once.
Oh, I see. Okay. I'm sorry. My head is swimming today, Susan, so I apologize.
Oh, yeah. I know the feeling. I know the feeling real well. As far as what Ben had to say.
Yeah.
I agree with everything he had to say, with one exception.
Okay.
I'm afraid we might end up going back to horse and buggy and Shanksmere.
Maybe in some areas, but in the cities, well, yeah, Shanksmere's pulling rickshaw and eating rice. I think Ben said that, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. And the trouble is, in the cities are very, very fragile. 20 years, I read someplace, a city, an American city, has 24 hours to live if the supply of food is interrupted.
Well, you know, I used to live in Atlanta, and I've mentioned this before. I used to live in Atlanta, and I lived on the banks of the Chattahoochee River. And in a lot, and the city of Atlanta gets its water supply out of the Chattahoochee. And there were places where it was maybe, 150 yards wide, and I could walk across it and never get the tail of my shirt wet.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to water a city on that? Look at Indianapolis. There is no major river near Indianapolis. I learned that from Kurt Vonnegut.
Yep.
Water resources. Any city. Some are less fragile than others, but virtually any city on this planet is incredibly fragile.
Yeah.
That's why the cities of the past are generally dug out of the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
They're called ruins.
Yeah. For very good reason. And, you know, if that type of thing happens, it's going to get really, really, really ugly.
Yeah, and nobody's safe. Nobody's safe. I mean, I kind of get nervous about this apocalyptic stuff, Susan, and I know you do too.
Mm-hmm.
But no one's safe. That's why I read that poem the other night, I'll live by the side of the road and be a friend of man.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're gonna have to learn to do that, or as was mentioned, a couple of nights ago, maybe Rapa Nui, you know, Easter Island. That didn't end well.
No, it didn't.
But generally, collapsing civilizations don't end well anywhere they are.
Nope.
So, I don't know. Maybe I'll take the weekend when it comes and try to just find some read the fine print about this bailout plan, because the thing that keeps hanging in my throat like a chicken bone is that the generalities are in terms of saving our betters. But even if, and it's what I mentioned to Ben, I don't see anything so far in anything that I've read that says the people who were forced into the market by mm-hmm. Reaganomics and by having their money hustled into the market, the people who were involuntarily forced into the market, the only respite they get out of this bailout is that their money, to use Mark Levine's analogy, their money is still sitting on the roulette table.
Yeah.
I mean,
they're still victims. And, you know.
What do you say to somebody like that? You know, I got a rather scathing little email last night, thinking that in me giving voice to, you know, some of the lizard brain stuff that happens with all of us, that I was somehow wishing for retirees to be broken. Good
no.
Christ, no.
I heard you read it, and no, we're not wishing for that. But you don't have to wish for something to see, well, you don't have to wish for an avalanche to see the snow coming at you.
Very good analogy.
No, it exists.
But the other thing, you know, the other thing that I'm trying to point out is, you know, while I've seen it all over the internet, Susan, I've seen it all over the internet. People saying, you know, let him die, let him go. And I've heard it in Congress. You know, Mark Levine mentioned some of it. If it's too big to fail, it's too big to exist.
Yeah.
But there are real world consequences. And that's why I keep pushing this. What does this country look like? I mean, do you think that any of the flappers with a glass of bathtub gin in one hand, dancing the night away in 1923, any of the Gatsby crowd, were any of them at that point in time able to imagine the America that was on the fast track coming at them with the lights out?
No.
They couldn't, they didn't, and as a result, they suffered for it.
Exactly.
We have to visualize it. We have to imagine it. We have to see it. I won't say dream it. I'll say nightmare it before we can be prepared for it.
Yeah.
Sorry, not yelling at you. You know that.
Well, yeah, you have to do what you have to do. And, you know, to me, that's being... with me, it was putting up as much food as possible, taking the steps I could take, because there are certain things I have no control over.
No.
So I'm not in the market. I'm too poor to be in the market. So if the market fails, it's going to fail, and the avalanche is going to land on me willy-nilly. Sorry.
Yeah, just because you're not in it doesn't mean it's not at hazard. There's an old Supreme Court case. Yeah, from the 1890s or whatever, and it deals with equities, you know, stocks and speculation and things like that. And there's this cute little phrase in it that says, the principal is always at risk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those elegant little sentences that is easy just to slide right past. It's like W.C. Fields' admonition that you can't cheat an honest man. Oh, well, okay, no, you. But that it has roots. It has meanings that you got to dig way. You know, it's like the. You know, that's just, that sentence is just the top of the iceberg. The principal is always at risk. And what that sentence means is that everything you have in this economy, everything, and you know, by saying in this economy, what I'm talking about is in your personal world.
Yep.
Everything you have is being played with. By a gang of rapacious gamblers on Wall Street.
Yeah, and they're not just rapacious; they're also gambling junkies. They can't get away with. They can't stay away from it. They're hooked on it.
Well, exactly. You know, that's why I've mentioned a couple of times my grandfather. The guy was not in the market. He wasn't anywhere near Wall Street.
And then he got nailed anyway. And the only thing that basically my husband and I have is our home and its contents. Now we stand to lose our home. The only thing is, if the crash is bad enough, it could be that things will get to the point where it will be... we're not going to take your house. We don't want your house. We can't do anything with your house.
No, well, like that'll be the... But no. Well, but wait a minute, Susan. That's the bank position.
Mm-hmm.
You still have to pay real property taxes.
Yeah, and that's...
The county and the state will take your house.
Yeah, and that's the kicker.
And there will be a banker standing at the auction who will pay pennies on the dollar for it.
Well, actually, in a way, my husband and I are a little bit better off because they have a law in Oregon that says if you're above a certain age and you're below a certain income,
that you're exempt.
You are exempt.
Yeah.
Until you sell the house, and then all that property tax comes due.
Hello. Yeah.
But you see, we don't plan on selling the house anyway, so it's no big deal.
Right. Precisely.
And I'm not going to worry about it because my kids, you know, they've got their own lives, and what they can inherit from me isn't going to be much anyway.
Well, that's the case with most of America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what made such hypocrisy of the right wing hollering, oh, yeah, we got to repeal the death tax. You know, it doesn't apply to most of us.
Yes, the death tax.
Right.
Screw the death tax. you know, the whole thing with the in between, there's a whole lot of hard times, and I can see them coming. And that's why I've done what I can, but I can only do a certain amount. Like, you know, when the crash comes, we won't be able to afford medical care.
No.
You break.
And that, you know, that makes the remarks, a month ago by that freakish McCain advisor who said the Census Bureau should stop counting uninsured because nobody in America is uninsured. They've always got the emergency room.
Yeah. Well, he should try it a few times.
Well, exactly. And they don't do monthly medications at the ER.
No, they don't. And when your life depends on monthly medications, as ours do, well, it's, you do what you can beyond that. Well, you just have to wait for the bomb to fall.
Dancing into 1929. Yep.
Yeah, so, it's not like we're saying we don't care. It's not like we're saying we don't know it's coming. It's we're saying we've done what we can beyond that. Tell me what to do. I'll do it.
Yeah. And meanwhile, John McCain, who literally ate cake while New Orleans drowned, has suddenly figured out that there's a crisis he needs to attend to.
Yeah.
Nice.
Mainly because that would get him out of a debate that he knows he's going to get.
Right. Yeah. That's why I was. Yeah. Come get your ass whooping. Yeah.
Yep.
That's what that is. Susan, thank you very much. And you and Donald, hang in there. Try not to let this eat your guts too much.
And same to you and Agnes.
Thank you very kindly. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. From Columbia City, Oregon, our news ninja and maintainer of Centab. That is Susan. Now, guys, if you're going to call in and go on hold, you kind of have to stay there till we get to you. That's how conversation radio works. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, brother. How you doing?
Hey, what's up, Albert?
Man. Well, the heat is getting sucked out of the summer, so it's completely, it's almost tundra up here. Oh, last day I'll be outside, I think, for a while, buddy. Anyway. Well, look what we got here. Look at what we've got here, Bob. You know, just real quick, I think, and you know me, I'm the gloom and doom over here sometimes, but I just got to say that I think people, as long as you got your towels, just remember not to panic. We're not going to panic. We're going to have food. We're going to have food. Okay, we're on technological breakthroughs that we didn't have back in that day. When we fall down, yeah, it's going to hurt, it's going to break, and people like Jim Cramer are going to be out of a job and tarred and feathered, and so it's going to be a wonderful thing. But there will be sweat and blood and tears and.
Well, but Albert, you say we're going to have food. What is it? Is it Maslow's hierarchy of needs? You've got to have food,
mm-hmm.
and you've got to have shelter.
Yep.
We've already seen what happened with the subprime crisis. If this sucker burns all the way to the ground, it's not just people who are in subprime mortgages who are in trouble.
Yeah, but
It's people who are in respectable mortgages that are in trouble, because all of, you know, there's a significant portion of America that goes down the drain with Wall Street. That's why I keep hammering this, that even if we bail out Wall Street, all that the people who were forced into the market, literally at gunpoint, well, not literally, but damn near, all they get out of the bailout is that their money is still at hazard. And that's a hell of a cold comfort.
Yeah. You know,
and there are people who can't, who are in the market, who can't get out. I mean,
I'll tell you what. No,
remember the Enron pensioners who, while the Enron muckety mucks were busily getting out of their Enron positions because they knew it was about to go in the toilet. All the Enron pensioners were in a stock participation program that said under no uncertain terms could they get rid of that stock or sell it or get out of it. Remember that?
Yep.
That little microcosm
is
the whole country now. That's the risk that the whole country faces.
True. But, Bob, this is a new paradigm. You know, you're touching glimpses of it when you talk about the things that Dennis Kucinich said. I mean, when you read that statement, I knew exactly who you were talking about. I knew exactly who you were.
I'm vain. I waited till the end but yeah, you did. Sure. Anybody who knows it was Dennis Kucinich.
Exactly. And you know what? That's the vision. That's the new paradigm. He's got it better than most. He knows what it's going to be. You know, he's the same height as John McCain, isn't he? So it isn't that he's short. It's that he's a visionary, and it's scary. But the thing is, it is going to be that way. You know, a lot of these people, you know, like, first off, we might even see one of these, you know, like, Jubilee things that you're talking about. I've heard, you know, mutterances of it and so on and so forth. But if it does happen the way it's going to have to happen, well, bud, it might just have to be the reset button has to be pressed. You might have to reboot the computer, and that means you have to shut it down and restore it to a new section. I mean, we have these abilities. You know, SWAT, they're going to cry. Jim Cramer's going to cry. But eventually you're going to sit there and go, wait, hang on. You're going to turn this ride into a nightmare. And this, just so you can have your property. And to a point, that's not going to happen. I mean, the inner communist to everybody is going to take over. And, you know, just like the farmers did out here when they, you know, they come and try to take a house, the farmers would all go out there and buy it, or, you know, bring some rope with them, you know?
Yeah, the penny auctions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know. Hang on. Yeah. Anyhow, I mean, so, you know, we're sitting here looking. There will be food. You know, we're also not looking. We'll also have to see where this food shortage thing goes, actually, before I jump too much.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's a lot of hurdles. There's a lot of hurdles that it's hard to jump. Because, I mean, look at the, okay, we talked a minute ago about the people who have respectable mortgages and what happens to them when they're not able to pay it. What about the people who live in rented housing when their landlord goes south?
Because the
people at the bottom of the food chain are going to be the ones that get come after first.
Well,
I mean, we know this because
Bob, if it's as bad as that is, guess what? The sheriff's going to have to worry about his house getting repoed too. And who's going to do the repoing when the repo man gets repoed? It's almost like, you know, like think of Running Man. What, steroids make you go deaf? And eventually it's going to happen. We're the ones. This is Fight Club, baby. We're the ones that cook for them, guard them when they sleep. We take out their garbage. What's the next line? Do not
talk about Fight Club.
But the thing is, this is the thing, though. We go along with what they want us to do, then we're really going to be. Then we're done. See, like, this is a heist. What they're doing to us is a heist.
They're telling us how bad it's going to be without, you know, painting a new paradigm. So all people can see is that there are lions and tigers.
Oh, yeah. Well, you mentioned steroids a couple of minutes ago. This is the Brinks job on steroids.
Oh, no doubt. This is the American job. You know, that's what this is. This is how Americans do it. This is how we go to war. You know, I mean, this is our absurdities here, that, you know, you're not going to be able to, you know, just repaint the thing. Just like as Albert Einstein said, you can't solve the problems with the same kind of thinking that got you into it. We're not going to be able to build a house the same way we built it, that it fell this way. We're going to need new designs. We're going to need completely new thought. You know, pension schmention, you know. We're going to have high-speed rails in this country. It's going to be affordable because we're going to have energy that's relatively cheap and clean. So you can get your little butt on a train and go to Florida and hang out on a beach and, you know, rest your bones. Bob, I got to go, bud. I got a problem over here with my kids.
Deal with that, Albert. Deal with that. Welcome to, right, it's the family life, you know. No sweat.
Indeed. All right, buddy. I'll
later, brother. Later. Bye now. Bye. Which does remind me, I'll be out tomorrow night. I assume the boy's going to be well enough to go play down the river. So we will do that. So I'll be away from the microphone tomorrow night, barring some unforeseen change in schedule and the circumstances. Okay, let's keep this rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
It's Roberto checking in.
I recognize your voice.
You know, it's hard. It really is hard not to just roar, praise Jesus, when a guy listens to the Bob Kincaid Show on Wednesday nights. It's hard not to do it.
Well, I don't think there's any injunction against doing so, Reverbo.
It's difficult. If there was any time to do it, I guess I think it's tonight. Hey, there's some good news though. I think. It sounds like the Obamas can go ahead and pick out that new linoleum floor for the Clinton bathroom at the White House, huh?
I hope so.
He really drilled a hole in that. You know how much that he loved his foosball and his gumball machines and that air hockey? I mean, he's always down there. And he really wears some holes in that old floor. They'll have to look at that and upgrade some of the countertops and stuff. But it sounds like the old Maverick is just kind of pulled out, huh?
No. See, now this is the Star Trek thing, Reverbo. This is him trying to do a Kobayashi Maru, to win in an unwinnable situation by changing the rules of the game. He's hoped it. Well, see, Barack Obama still, my friends, Barack Obama is still involved in the old politics of the past. We must stand together now, my friends, and that's why I'm going back to Washington. But you know what? We've got the smartest audience in radio. This just came in from our buddy Larry in Florida. Check this out, Reverbo. With regard to the debates and how Obama should respond, check this out. Is this genius? I mean, I had to close the mic and just giggle out loud when I read this.
I can't wait.
Okay, here's how it should happen. Obama should say, "Okay, no debate. I won't participate in the debate." And John McCain won't participate in the debate Friday. What we'll do instead, seeing how our vice presidential nominees are supposed to be able to step in immediately in case of emergency, I'll send Biden to Mississippi and you send Palin.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of takes your breath away, doesn't it?
Praise Jesus. Here we go. Yeah.
Glory.
Oh, man. That'd be something to see.
And, you know, I mean, that's going to be tough because, you know, when Laura Pickles Bush comes out and says, well, no, Sarah Palin's not. She's not prepared to be the president. You know, when she kind of, because the Laura Pickles did that today, you know.
I know. Yeah, I saw that. That's a brilliant idea, though. I can totally understand. That's what the second in command is there for, right?
Right. You know, we got an emergency. I can't be in the debate. Me and John can't be in the debate. So, Joe, you and Sarah go over and debate in Mississippi, all right?
Okay. Yeah, Sarah will be on the first rocket sled down there, I'm sure.
Oh, she'll be on the first rocket sled back to Moose Lips or wherever.
Oh, man. You know, it was funny yesterday, and I don't know if anyone is even paying attention to the president of the United States, George W. Bush, anymore, but he, in all this hubbub with the bailout business, you remember Bush weighing in with the concept that, that, if there's no golden parachute for my buddies, there's no deal. Did you catch that yesterday?
Yeah, I kind of did. But right, nobody is paying attention to him.
No, but I just thought that was great. I mean, really, that's all you need to know about any of this. You know, their plan, I don't know, in more simple terms, here's what happened, I think. Their friends, they're out of money, Bob. They spent all their money. You know, it's just a shame. They use reckless with the money, and it's all gone. And if we would only give them some more money, everything would just be fine.
Well, look, it's what it is. Reverbo, this is a choice here, okay? It really is. This, we have the option here. On the one hand, you got the Bush administration plan, which is to give a drunk a barrel of beer.
Exactly. And some fireworks while you're at it, yeah.
Yeah, right, yeah. Maybe some gasoline.
Yeah.
On the other hand, what responsible Democrats in Congress are talking about is an intervention. And the first thing you do in an intervention is get the booze away from the drunk.
Yeah.
And then you surround him and warmly and lovingly explain to him that we're going to help you get well now.
That's right.
And there is a way to do this. I'm convinced. You know, dadgummit, we're the American people. We came up with the Constitution, for heaven's sakes. You know, the most beautiful declaration of what it should mean to be human for the time came from from somebody born on this continent, the Declaration of Independence.
Indeed.
Dear God, look at the things we've done. This is the time. This is the time, Reverbo, when we have got to dig deep. You know, this is the speech that the coach gives to the football team when it's fourth and one on the goal line and, you know, a second to go. You dig deep. You find that part of your being, and we find that part of our national being that, by God, wants it. And we can do that. But we've got to focus on what that, you know, that's why Franklin Roosevelt said, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. You know, that's a very, very elegant, short way of saying it hurts a hell of a lot going to the dentist than it does getting to the dentist.
It does. I mean, think about the callers you've had tonight so far and synthesize what everybody has said. I have trouble arguing really with any of them. It is scary. It's almost impossible not to be pessimistic about this. But on the other hand, yes, it is. What else would other football analogy? You need a little luck. And what is that? Luck is when opportunity meets preparation, I believe.
Yeah, Edison? I'm a firm believer in luck. I found the harder I work, the more I have of it.
Yeah. Now it is a shame, of course, that the Republicans have spent so much time not exploring things like alternative energy. Otherwise, the preparation would be meeting the opportunity now.
Exactly, and that's the thing with them. That's why I said at the beginning of the program, Reverbo, this is their last chance. This is their Argonne Forest. This is, you know, this is their Battle of the Bulge. They ain't got nothing, and they, you know, because that's the whole thing. The Germans had to make a time drive through the Allied lines to get to the fuel. And if they didn't do it in time, they ran out and they got beat, and they ended up destroyed. That's where the Republicans are now. Now, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be so strident, but
you're on target, with the exception that those Germans were lucky to escape with their lives, and the boys now are escaping with about three more yachts and six more Ferraris than they had when they got there.
Right.
That doesn't set well with people, as you can see, which goes towards I don't know about if this is optimistic, but your buddy David and you touching on this whole Rovian plan from the undead. Yeah, the scenario was the October surprise, right? It was, all this is going to crash now. Everybody's going to panic, including Obama, and just kind of climb on board this half-baked plan by Paulson, who is not a person. Well, if you do any research on Mr. Paulson, he's not what you would call an objective steward of our economic machinery. But, you know, everybody was going to just jump on that in a panic, leaving the old Maverick, the lame anti-bailout voice in the wilderness. And, you know, eventually they would all hope that that would be enough to, like, kind of crawl into the White House. I don't think that's going to happen. Matter of fact, I'd bet you a shiny new dime that ain't going to happen. But that's what they were hoping for.
That's the only hope they have.
There is no hope they have. And
you know, we like I said, we gotta dig deep. We gotta tap that wellspring of American can do, because we've had, you know, when you combine Reagan, you know, never mind that. Well, my friends, it's morning in America and there's a bear. Never mind that. When you combine 8 years of Reagan, 4 years of Bush one, and 8 years of Bush two. And just the 8 years of Bush too. If you look at the timelines, the 8 years of Bush too match almost perfectly the era of Harding, Coolidge, and Hoover. All right, it parallels. But despite all of, you know, the Republicans, all that Morning in America crap was a bunch of happy gas. All right, there was no reality to it. But we do have a wellspring we can tap, and that's where Franklin Roosevelt was, with all we have to fear is fear itself. And all we've gotten from the Bush administration for the last 8 years is all we have is fear.
And a bunch of these people constantly keep telling us what we can't do, what isn't possible, where we're not headed, and why we're all stupid.
You know, dadgummit, this is 9/11. This is 9/11 again, and you know what? I've never jumped on board with the 9/11 Bush did it theory, but you know this one I got no problem with. Bush did it. They did it. You know, I did it with my little hatchet. They did it.
Oh, they did it, and it always bugs me. People always. It was so easy to give that little monkey a pass. And people would, it was real popular to refer to him as incompetent, refer to Bush as kind of a boob. Well, let me tell you, Bob, these people don't do anything by accident.
No, this is the end result of everything they've hoped for. This is their chance. This is their last chance and their best chance to kill all the stuff they hate. Whether it's food stamps or Social Security or Medicaid or Medicare. Or school lunches. It's all within their grasp, and they can get their hands around its neck and squeeze until the life's gone out of it on this one roll of the dice.
I'm ready to sharpen up the spikes and get the garlic out. I'm ready.
Yeah, because that's the alternative. They get one roll, but, you know, if it comes up against them, they're done. This, you know, we've got to find the opportunity in the hardship. We can dig deep. I'm sorry. I know Ben presented some pretty grim stuff, but I have, and this isn't, it's Wednesday night. It's prayer meeting Reverbo. So this is an article of faith, and I recognize the difference between faith and knowledge.
Praise Jesus.
But this is an article of faith for me. We can get out of this. But the American people have got to wise up, get the blinkers off, and stare at the monster wide-eyed. This is 9/11 all over again. This is the same thing, the same formula is being followed. Oh my God, pass this now in the middle of the night. Don't read the bill, for God's sakes, just vote!
Yeah, what is that Naomi Klein calls that? That's the crisis capitalism. That's what they have. Yeah, that's exactly what they wait till something is so out of control. And don't kid yourself, all these little plans have been on the shelf for a long time. They're just waiting to take them down and float them on out to everybody when well, it's panic time, right? Well, I was on hold for a little while. I zoomed over to check the population, check the census. The difference between 1930 and today, you're talking about what the face of this might be like, you know. And then I was hearing Bob talk about, you know, how dire things could be. Anyway, here's something that clearly is a gigantic distinction. In 1930, there were 122 million Americans. Okay.
Yeah.
But today, there's, well, you know, there's like 305 million of us. So I don't know what the faces exactly look like, but there's going to be a lot more of them. You know that. I mean, you remember those faces anyway. It just seems like it's from a land like just. And it was generations ago. That must have been eons ago. You know,
and it's all you know, and it's all in black and white.
Yeah, you know the Walker Evans photographs. You know the Death Ball. Everybody remembers this. Well, everybody should remember it. And I don't know if the faces are going to look like that. And I hope, like, I'm with you. Let's crank up. Let's get these cold river people. Let's just crank all this up and pull ourselves out of this. I mean, it's there for the, you know, it is there. And you could just think that Americans are just going to go ahead and say.
Well, you know, Jersey in the chat room's got it spot on. He says the problem we're in is basically economic terrorism. I mean, I lived through 9/11. I listened to the radio, all of that stuff, and now I'm, you know, smack dab in the middle of the conversation about it. And I can tell you, for reasons that bear analysis that would take the rest of the night, but I can tell you with 100% certainty, and I mean no offense to anybody who was harmed or hurt by September 11th. That's not what I'm about. What I'm about to say is that what I'm getting and what I'm sensing is that there is a far more pervasive sense of terror and fear. Because you know what? Osama bin Laden can't get somebody in middle America. He just can't. He's not inclined to try. But a bunch of thugs, because that's what they are. We're Wall Street bankers. Yeah, no.
No.
They're thugs, okay? And they can get somebody in middle America. The 6'7" Arab dude in the white robes with the portable dialysis machine is not a risk to Ma and Pa Kettle in you know, Donut Junction, Kansas. But you know what? George Bush, John McCain, the whole crowd, the Republican Party, and the Wall Street cronies are. And that's why the terror is much more pervasive.
Oh, it is. These people got huge in no small part because they all got their claws into, like, government retirement plans and stuff. Where I used to work, I mean, these companies were huge. I didn't really have a choice. It was either go with them. No, I didn't have a choice. As I recall, they took my money out of my paycheck, and in it went, which was administered by some people. That, I mean, I didn't have a clue what was going on, and I didn't have a choice.
No, all you were told is, well, you know, we're taking it out before we take out the taxes, so you're not really paying taxes on it. Isn't that great?
That's just super. Yeah, another thing that's going to just actually drive everybody crazy. You know, even when times are good, and correct me if I'm wrong, banks hate repossessions, don't they? People don't like to repossess your house. Then they're stuck in having it unloaded, but you usually always lose money.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
The best example of that is the repoed car sitting in the credit union parking lot very seldom has a nice wax job on it.
Exactly. So we just kept hearing about, you know, it's again, do you want to help people from the bottom? Do you want to build a floor? Or do you want to still hope things trickle down from the top? Do we want to give the billionaires more chips to play with at the table? But when you think about the idea that the Treasury, which is you and me, is going to go ahead, their plan is for us to just go ahead and pick up these just crappy debts and crappy assets for, well, that's, of course, the question, for what? Is it 25 cents on the dollar, or is it going to be $1.10 on the dollar? But assuming that it's like, you know, a nickel on the dollar, can you imagine how you would feel if you were begging the bank to, like, just work with you a little bit to restructure your mortgage so you could just stay in your house? You know, they must have.
Actually, I don't have to imagine that. I'm kind of doing that right now with my dad's place.
Yeah.
But
yeah, they'd much rather have the check coming in once a month than have your house And so now we're going to just go, well, forget it. We'll just go ahead and, you know, grab this for like 25 cents on the dollar, and you all got to be out of here by next week. I mean, that would just, how many millions of people is that going to piss off?
Lots.
You know,
but the question is, and this really is the, you know, this is the $1.8 billion question, Reverbo. What will the American people do about it? Have the American people become so numbed? Have we been so anesthetized and so separated? Remember, one of the primary functions of things like television is to keep us from being together, to destroy, not to create, but to destroy community by creating things like, you know, game shows where you get to vote on who yodels the best. You know, it's BS community. All right. The question is whether America can be pulled away even by crisis, whether we can be pulled away enough to actually demand a realistic solution to this problem. And that's why, you know, that's why the Repiglick and I got to do it now, because if we sit down, and, you know, Bush's line about, you know, we can't have the Democrats trying to add things to this. No. Because the sober reflection, emphasis on the word sober, sober reflection might actually begin to come up with solutions, like that stuff I read from Dennis Kucinich. There's some of that doesn't have a blessed thing to do with Wall Street, but it has everything to do with the reinvigoration and the reinvention and the renewal of this country that is badly in need of it.
Oh, yeah. The big picture of Wall Street is a symptom. There's these fundamental things that we have to change here. And David K. Johnson on?
Yeah.
And he was talking about, and I'll just end our call here since it's Wednesday night. We'll head over to the religious part of town here. And I think he made a comment that in the Bible, that the most often referenced thing in there that was looked down upon, I mean, just despised. Remember this?
Yeah, the sin among sins.
The middle class or people without should never have to bail out the people who have. The have-nots should not have to be called upon to help the have. Remember that?
Yeah, and for the people who have to ignore those who have not.
So let's hear from all our religious friends, our fundamentalist friends. Let's look at them to weigh in.
Well, I'll tell you what. Okay, we'll move on to another call here just in a second, Reverbo, but I've got the answer to you, answer for you, brother, right before we go.
Okay.
Because I got an email today. The subject line in it is, please forward this to your pastor. The upcoming, it is, of course, from the Reverend Donald Wildman of the American Family Association.
Mm-hmm.
The upcoming election is the most critical in the history of our nation. The very future of our nation's foundation is at stake. Every person will be affected. If the liberals win, then our foundation will no longer be based on the traditional Judeo-Christian morality. It will gradually, but assuredly, be based on an ever-shifting, ever-moving foundation. There's your answer. That's what the religious right says to all of this. Pray.
They don't get. Yeah, well, that's okay. I'm printing tickets, but I don't have a ticket for him. He gets left behind.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, my time, Brent. Make it personal.
Yeah, okay? yeah. Make it personal, and from the right, Reverend John Hagee, starve.
Thank you. Well,
not you, not you. Them, Reverbo. Have a great evening. Thanks for the conversation. Bye now. There is some hope out of all of this. There really, really is. I promise. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, is it me again?
It's you again.
Hey, this is Brian in Tennessee. I apologize for earlier. My phone died.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. But, yeah, what I said when we lost you was that playing global search and replace is a lot of fun because you've proven that. In fact, the Saracuda is kin with that definition.
Apparently I didn't get to read that whole thing. Maybe I'll read it later, but I've got, I don't have the stream here because I don't have internet in my apartment, but I've got my phone plugged in, so I've got enough juice. I apologize. It was a little one-sided conversation. I was in a rush to get my point out. But
no worries.
We can have a conversation now. You were hitting the nail right on the head when you said that it's just what I was trying to say before my power died. Just like the Patriot Act, they're trying to pass something in the middle of the night when we're in a state of panic and shock. When, you know what it reminds me of? There's a scene in the movie A Clockwork Orange. You've seen that, right?
Many times.
The prisoner, he gets a deal where he gets to get out of prison early to be a part of some strange experiment. And the warden has some papers for him to sign. He says, sign this, please. And he starts to read it, and the guard says, don't read it! Sign it!
Exactly.
That's what I feel like. When Bush is up there saying, you know, there's no time to debate this bill, even though we're invested in this more than ever. It's always been our money. We're the taxpayers, but we're really, more than ever, this is our money. And they're out there saying, don't read it, sign it.
Exactly. Yeah, don't look at this. Don't look at this. No, act out of your fear. Has there ever been a good decision, Brian, made in a state of panic or a state of fear? I would say the odds of reaching right decision, correct action, in a state of panic are probably 1 in 100. You know, 1 in 50 tops. I mean, granted, if you're panicking and you throw one die, you've got a 1 chance in 6 of coming up correct. But this isn't that. This has to have sober reflection.
And I mean, well, everybody's panicked for good reason. Now, look, you know, and I have mixed feelings about the bailout because, you know, I've got a mom who's, you know, she's nearing retirement. And, well, she was a housewife for like 30 years, and she got her PhD in her 50s. She's only been a professional for like less than 10 years. But she has a retirement plan that is partially invested in AIG. So, you know, I don't want to see her lose that. And, you know, so I guess we have to do the bailouts. But if the taxpayers are going to foot the bill, we need to see what's in it. And, you know, people like Bush and McCain are saying that, no, they want to play on our panic.
Yeah, no, don't look. Don't look. No. You don't need to know the details. They're boring.
Right away, or else there will be dire consequences.
Well, exactly. And, you know, keep, you know, work with that metaphor, you know, when you talk to people, whatever, work with that metaphor of the bailout. Because the fundamental nature of bailing something out is that it keeps coming in. You've got to patch the hole in the boat, and then you can bail things out. And so the sober and mature and serious question is, how do we patch the hole in the boat?
That's a much more complicated question that goes all the way back to, I mean, I think this stuff is, and I got to blame Bill Clinton for a little bit of this with NAFTA and stuff like that. I mean, this has been coming for a long time. It goes back to Reagan, really. I mean, Reagan said that, you know, what was it he said about government, the 9 most scary words in the English language, I'm from the government, I'm here to help, the government is the problem.
Right.
And John McCain has been the same way. He's been about deregulation the whole night. Deregulation, deregulation, deregulation. And then even the day before the crash, he said he was against the AIG bailout. And then the next day he was for it. No wonder he's ducking out of these debates. And, you know, start of my call, I was going to be, you know, nonpartisan about saying, but, you know, a couple calls earlier, what your caller said, he pretty much had it straight on. He said it was a heist. That's what it is. We've got privatized profit and socialized debt. It's a heist. They're just trying to rob the hardworking, the taxpaying people, and just give profits to the robber barons. You know, as long as, I guess, Bush is in charge. Maybe it's a good sign, because maybe it means that they know that they're on their last leg and Barack Obama really is going to be president, and they're just trying to pull off whatever heist they can while they can. Huh?
Yeah. Well, that's that in talking with Reverbo, Brian, that's kind of where I was going is that, or what I tried to make clear is that this is, for them, this is a brilliant, brilliant stroke. It is literally, you know, coup and stroke mean the same thing. All right. And this is a coup. This is literally a coup upon the American people,
I think the coup happened shortly after, I don't know, either shortly after 9/11 or shortly after Al Gore was robbed of the presidency, but I see where you're going. Go ahead.
But this is, you know, this is a coup, this is a stroke, and it is a stroke of genius if the Repiglicans can pull it off. Because, again, if they can, they have the chance to finally finish the work that was the stated, that is the stated goal of basically the god of so-called conservative policy, Grover Norquist, to drown the government in the bathtub. Remember that phrase? He wasn't kidding. Granted, you know, the metaphor of it for it became came to horrifying life with Katrina and now with Ike, but they really have never said. This is a process that begins with Alexander Hamilton and comes all the way into the present. There has always been an element of the American people, Brian, or of American society. There's always been an element of American society whose goal is to destroy what the framers of the Constitution began.
But see, the first thing, the whole myth about drowning the government in the bathtub, even if you're a hardcore libertarian, that's a myth because, you know, you say if you want less government, less government, less government, if you have a total laissez-faire attitude and let the corporations do whatever they want, they will be your government, and that's the definition of fascism.
Why, yes, it is. It's also the definition of oligarchy, which
right.
is also what they want. But they, no, they really, no, they, see, the, but when they say they want to drown the government in the bathtub, Brian, what they mean is that they want to kill government as we understand it that meets the needs of people who aren't as rich as them. Okay? So that means they want to kill Social Security. They want to kill Medicare. They want to kill Medicaid. They want to kill school lunches. They want to kill student loan programs because, you know, they want to be the only ones who get higher education. They want to kill everything that benefits the middle or the, you know, I don't believe in lower class
but
and middle
how,
class
how, but how
working. They want to kill
up,
the work, anything that benefits the working class.
But how long are we going to put up with lower and lower wages and just being their slaves forever and ever? I mean, there's got to be, you know, they got to keep us happy, at least, you know, television.
Well, why do you think that the religion industry isn't impacted by any of this? Why do you think that that thing that I read from the Reverend Donald Wildman didn't have a blessed thing to say in the election about the economy? Because that's what's going to keep us happy. We're going to take our refuge in a bunch of imaginary BS. That's the goal.
If I can shift the topic here for a second, as far as like Palin and McCain, it seems like secrecy is spreading such to the point that, you know, like Dick Cheney declared that, you know, he had a new level of top secret, and, you know, this is the most secretive administration we've ever had. And it almost seems like, you know, Governor Palin, she, you know, nobody's allowed, no reporters are allowed to talk to her, and now it's like McCain is ducking out of the debate. They're inaccessible. It's almost like Cheney's level of government secrecy, that philosophy is spreading even to the elections and even to the candidates, to where Governor Palin and McCain are as untouchable as Cheney and his top secret documents. The secrecy has spread even to the candidates.
Oh, yes, it has. But that's the
candidates. We don't even get to know what Governor Palin stands for, and McCain's not even going to show up to the debates. And they could very well win if the American people are stupid enough.
You'll never go broke underestimating the intelligence of the American electorate, I promise.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, right now, see, what we're doing right now is what I hope that the our elected representatives are to one degree or another doing. We're asking questions. We are visualizing. We are it was the Disney people who invented the word imagineering. We've got to have creativity. We've got to have a willingness to address the problem without buying into the old thinking, like Reverbo was talking about. And the questions have to be asked, and the answers have to be posited. This has to be, and you know, the very heart and soul of what we're talking about is also the first couple of steps in the scientific method. That's what has to be applied to these problems, whereas what the Repiglicans are doing is typical, and of course this works in nicely with it being Wednesday night and everything, Brian, but what the Repiglicans are doing is that they are approaching this not from the scientific method, not from sober, mature inquiry, not positing a theory or a hypothesis and putting together the questions to prove it or disprove it. No. What they're doing is they're trying to offer it to us on faith again. Oh, believe us. You know, if you make the billionaires feel better, the billionaires will make you feel better, too. Take it on faith.
Now, Bob, I have to disagree with you. They are approaching this on a scientific, methodical level. They are using, the Republican propaganda works on using common logical fallacies on purpose, knowing that people will buy them. They know that it's bullshit, but they use it. Now, there's a good thing.
The analysis of the public response, there's some really, really intense psychology. That I absolutely agree with you on. But the pitch itself is a faith-based pitch.
Right, but they understand the psychology of who they're pitching it to. Now, there's a good thing you can all Google search it. Carl Sagan's baloney detection kit. He just lays out a lot of the classic logical fallacies, like the ad hominem, the slanted slope, the straw man, and all that stuff. He lays it out so you can understand logical fallacies when you see them, but you also need to understand that the people that are in power, they know that they are logical fallacies. They are using them on purpose in a very skillful way against people that they know will swallow it. So it is, they are using a scientific method. It's just a very sneaky one. It's not very honest.
Right, but that's what I'm getting at. Their application of the scientific method was to come up with the means by which they can accomplish their goals of destroying everything that we have and terrifying America into going along with them. But then the offering, as you know, on the one hand, I'm saying we need to look for the solutions methodically. Whereas the Repiglicans are saying, no, you just got to trust us. If you give the billionaires more money, we'll all be better. That part of it is faith-based.
Correct. It's faith-based on the part of the people that buy that, yeah.
Right, and they're counting on a lot of America to buy into it based on either faith or fear.
But how much faith and fear in racism and fear about the name, Obama sounds like Osama. I mean, I ran into a good friend of mine. She doesn't pay attention to politics. She's 20 years old. She's very liberal. She's exactly the type of person that would vote for Barack Obama, but she doesn't pay attention to this. And I mentioned Obama to her, and she actually said something to me that she was scared of his name. And I actually educated her about the situation. Now she's voting for Barack Obama. I mean, when I told her that Sarah Palin was against abortion, even in cases of rape and incest, you know, she pretty much figured it out. But, you know, I got to wonder, like, isn't there a point, like, when working people, isn't there a point when you're losing your 401k, you're losing your house, et cetera, et cetera? At some point, doesn't that overpower your racism or your fear of Obama's name or whatever? Don't you ever?
That's the eternal question. That's the question that what's his name, Mr. Franks, asked in What's the Matter with Kansas, and that is why people will vote their emotions over their guts and their wallets. And the day that the Democrats figure out the answer to that question, it's over.
They say that liberals are the ones that vote based on emotion.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Right, because they accuse us of what they are most guilty of. If I had horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner handy, we could make that
rejection.
Yeah, he could explain it in little bitty words that even I could understand.
They call it projection, where you project onto others the things that you are guilty of yourself.
Exactly.
And that's what, of course, the Republicans are masters of that.
But they are indeed.
What do you think is going to happen about these debates, though? I mean, is McCain going to show up? Are they just coaching him? Does he need a little bit of time or what?
He's trying to embarrass Obama. He is, and this really is, you know, Star Trek based Kobayashi Maru. For those familiar with it, this is an attempt to manipulate a no-win situation for McCain. And so he thinks that he has put Obama in a corner. Obama has said, I'm going to debate. I can do more than one thing at once. I can do several things at one time.
And McCain says, well, you're not paying attention. You're not doing.
And, you know, McCain's the one who he got out there and said, tell Congress to get back to work, when he's missed more votes than any other senator.
Right.
And so he's trying to play that card on Obama, saying, like, well, Obama's out there politicking.
Right, but, you know, if
Washington working.
If they would, if Obama would follow our buddy Larry's suggestion, it would be a brilliant solution to it. To wit,
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah, it wouldn't that be gorgeous? It would absolutely be, be gorgeous.
Yeah, it would.
Well, Brian, I got to roll along and catch a couple more phone calls. I want to make sure we get everybody in tonight because, you know, it's kind of the
thanks
name.
Thanks for taking my call. It's good to talk to you.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for making the call. It's always a pleasure. Don't be such a stranger.
Sure. Holler out to everybody in the chat room.
All right. Bye now.
And they're all listeners. See you later. Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
That's Brian, otherwise known in the chat room as Seppo. And we'll just keep this rolling. Nope, not there. Hi, welcome to the program.
Gonzo greetings. What's going on, Bob?
Hey, Spike. What's happening, brother?
Not much. Just watching the nation crumble before my eyes and just enjoying the ride at this point. It's hard to be on a positive note anymore these days.
I'm positive things are messed up.
Yeah, I'm pretty positive it's only going to get worse before it gets anywhere near better. Yeah, I would say, by the way, the whole trying to get the people to sign the bill real quick, I'd say the best way to compare it is it's become a high-pressure timeshare spiel. You know what I mean? Basically, we've all been brought into a big timeshare sales pitch. hopefully, at least, like, this time I'll get, like, a driver and a putter to go with those wedges from the other one.
Right.
So
I can't go enjoy the free vacation until you've bought your timeshare. Hey, what are you trying to do? Leave the room. What? Quit that.
That's kind of the tactics they're using at this point. No real surprise. And you know, the whole McCain not debating bit, you know, he's just ripping off congressmen now. Because Charlie Dent from the Lehigh Valley, he's been pulling that stunt this whole summer. And, you know, that bunch of them got together with their, quote, energy plan and, you know, demanded everyone come back and talk about their energy plan or otherwise you're not doing anything. And, you know, they're not campaigning, which they're avoiding campaigning so that they can avoid the word Republican associated with their name. Basically, that's the panic tactic that has gone on with the McCain campaign. And, I mean, it's the campaign that at one point in the primaries, everyone quit. So, I mean, it's got to be highly disorganized.
Yeah, that goes back to the time when McCain was blaming his failures in the primaries on the sweater that made him look gay. Remember that?
You know what? There's been so many debacles in his campaign, it's hard to keep track of them anymore. That one, I don't quite remember.
Yeah, it was out there. And my friends, the reason that the campaign's languishing right now is I've been wearing these sweaters. My wife's been making me wear these sweaters that make me look gay. Nah, he did that, really.
Of course. It's the woman's fault that...
Well, you know, after all, she lays on the makeup like a trollop, like some sort of yeah, right.
She's kind of like Mimi from the old Drew Carey show, almost. But,
oh dear God, my eyes.
then again, too, she has all the money, so I guess she buys the clothes, and he's, you know, the poor one in that relationship, and hence why he can never quite forget how many houses he owns since. Most of them actually belong to her.
Or the car's there.
Yeah. But,
yeah, I'm sure we've got a Hupmobile somewhere, my friends.
But, and I also heard a funny line from Chris Rock this morning out when he was plugging his big thing on HBO about Sarah Palin. He said, when he heard that she was picked, he thought Al Davis did it. It was such a terrible pick. But, real good laugh at that whole campaign. Anyone who votes for that campaign, Dennis Leary wrote a song about you about 13 years ago.
Yeah, I'm an... Yeah.
I mean, that's really all I can think about at this point. I mean, geez, it's just a terrible campaign. If you're a conservative, it's not even a good ticket for a conservative. Yeah. the good ticket for, you know, Chai Guerrera's crazy twin or something.
Now, well, there. See, that's the thing. That's been one of the pig licking dodges all along, Spike. Is that you know, we don't really like John McCain, but you know, we'll hold our noses and vote for him if it's between him and that other one. You know, that guy, he might take his oath on a co-ring.
Yeah, well, and his popularity died because all the people that we despise are the ones now backing him. Yeah, whether it's the crazy, you know, Falwell before he died, or, you know, for that matter, Rick Santorum. These are the wrong people to have endorsing you at this point right about now. These are the endorsements he's shooting for. So the only fear is that there's no other party that could ruin a golden opportunity like this other than the Democratic Party. So that's my other concern, is that I got a feeling they're going to somehow botch the ball in the red zone, right down the stretch, and
no, you mean they're gonna Romo the hold?
Yeah, yeah, because I mean, they 2004 they should have had a slam dunk, and it didn't happen. You know, the places where it was stolen, it shouldn't even been relevant, because they should have been able to actually get more people if they did a more of an educative campaign about why you should vote for him, other than they're not Bush, which was a pretty bad approach because some people needed a little explaining on the differences, and you know, that didn't happen. You know, they just went out and got their core supporters whooped up, and they realized you need other people to vote for you too if you're going to win elections. So, you know, it looks like they got more people from the other side this time around, almost by default. They just need to learn how to hold on to that this time around. You know, in 04, at one point, it looked like Kerry looked like a really good contender, and down the stretch, it was just in shambles. Yeah, you know, that's my number one fear, because God only knows, if McCain gets in office, that means somewhere within 4 years, Palin will become president, more than likely.
Don't take me there. No. No.
Just Deadpool odds, sadly, in favor of that being a possibility.
I haven't checked with Harris in Reno lately, but I wouldn't be surprised at all. And Lord knows the bookies in London have probably, you know, they get it right a lot of the time. So, but I'm afraid to ask.
Yeah, I mean, you just gotta do it's like a typical numbers game. The higher the number gets, the more likely it is to hit. You know, that's precisely the case there. You know, so yeah, that's just a scary thought. You know, somebody who was just picked. For the simplest reasons,
I know.
Yeah, but I will say, I think the reason she hasn't talked to the press, I think I know exactly what she's doing to study up to be ready to talk foreign policy. I think, because apparently I'm doing the same thing now through Netflix. Apparently, she's watching all the old episodes of Airwolf to figure out foreign policy. Yeah,
well, I love it. She's got to be so protected that, and you know, I criticize CNN a lot, but I got to give them a little bit of props this evening for what they did yesterday. You know, she went to the United Nations to show the fact that, I guess, her foreign policy experience, that she could sit down for a photo op with a foreign leader. So they sat her down with Hamid Karzai, you know, our creature, and Saakashvili from Georgia, our creature. They sat her down with a bunch of creatures, but she threw out. She threw out the reporters and the producers and said, you know, camera crew only. And you know what CNN did? They said, screw it. No camera crew. And the reason it was important was because CNN was in charge of the pool footage. Okay, so that meant everybody didn't get the pictures. And then they said, okay, they can come in. But that's how desperate they are.
They only let one person in for a few seconds, basically, before they kicked them out.
Yeah, the whole thing was for 20 seconds, but then, you know, Campbell Brown, I guess she's trying to wrangle for a Rachel Maddow-style spot at CNN, delivered this blistering editorial saying, you know, stop with the sexism, stop pretending that she's some sort of dainty flower that can't take a question, you know, and, you know, it was great. It was great. Dandy.
Yeah, well, I believe she's also directly up against Overman as of right now. So, I mean, that's a good thing in a way, that the corporate cable news is actually now, instead of trying to fight for all Fox's viewers, they're They're fighting for the more progressive viewers, potentially, or the more non-Republican viewers, I should say, maybe. And, yeah, hey, on the upside there, the writing's really on the wall of O'Reilly. That his number's just going to keep going down soon, much like many other things with him.
Well, his audience is dying, literally.
Yeah, well, you know, back in the day, this is no joke, he started out up around here at the ABC affiliate in Scranton, WNET 16. He, along with occasionally doing consumer bits, stories in the news, he wrote the jokes for Uncle Ted's Ghoul School, a show that they did for...
No.
just to give you a good idea.
Did Uncle Ted ever scream, "We'll do it live, we'll do it live"? Thing sucks.
I got a feeling Uncle Ted in his ghoul makeup wasn't as scary looking as Billow is on his own.
Ain't that the truth? Hey, Spike, good talking to you, brother. Hey, who do the fish take on this Sunday?
Oh, I don't know. It doesn't even matter. They beat the Patriots. That's all that matters. This way, there's no potential undefeated talk out of New England anymore. No one's more tired of hearing that than Miami fans. So. Hey, we've only won 3 games in 24 games. Out of the last 24 games, 2 of them were the great New England Patriots. So, yeah, it's always good to be a spoiler.
Sure it is. You take care, Spike.
Have a good one.
All right, bye now. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Hey, Luke, what's happening?
Well, I figured out what our response should be after whatever this claptrap was we'd get at 9 o'clock. Every Democrat should just stand up, look in the microphone, and say, "You fooled me once, can't get fooled again."
Oh, I like that. I like that.
You know, it's all like you said, this is the Patriot Act Part 2. We're going to run everything we do because you're going to have to vote at this at 3:15 in the morning. And, you know, we've waited, and I heard one of them tonight, I think it was Chuck Todd, was saying, you know, why wasn't the president out 10 days ago making this speech? Because they want to wait and get it to the last second so they can say, you haven't got time to argue, you've got to vote on this. And if you don't vote on this, you're against America.
Well, exactly. And, see, I really want to believe, there's that word, I really want to think that the Democrats are serious this time and they're really, really going to do their job. But at the same time today, in the midst of all this, something a little bit unnoticed happened. And I don't know if you...
The capitulation on the oil...
Bingo. The House of Representatives voted today to end the ban on offshore drilling. And it'll go to the Senate next... And the Senate will wilt like lettuce under hot grease.
It's like, you know, I tell them, you know what? That's fine. We're gonna release the ban on one condition. You'll have to start paying your leases now.
Well, that's the thing. The story I'm reading from the Associated Press says that it sets the stage for the Interior Department to offer leases in some Atlantic federal waters as early as 2011.
The pay this time. For so many of those leases, they don't pay on anymore.
Right.
I mean, they're like,
well, and if McCain gets into office, they won't pay on him in 2011 either.
Oh, no, he won't leave them. He'll say, here, you can just have the lease, you know.
If you've ever had an urge to go to Rehoboth, if you've ever had an urge to go to Ocean City, Nag's Head, Hilton Head, Myrtle, Daytona, and up and down, if you ever had to do it before 2011.
Because then you're going to have a derrick sitting there off the coast where you can see it.
Yeah, and those nice little hydro blobs will be washing up on shore.
Mm-hmm. Because like now they're out so far, you'd have to take a boat to go see them. Don't worry, folks. Soon they're going to be up so close you won't even need binoculars.
Nope, you won't. I mean, and
put one in the center of Tampa Bay. Come on.
Well, anybody who's ever been to the Redneck Riviera down in lower Alabama, and has stood at Fort Morgan, knows. Yeah, you're not kidding, Luke. You really don't need binoculars. They're just sitting there.
Been down to Mobile and some of the fun parts down in there. Life is just wonderful. Some of them. Most people, you know, it's one of those things. You understand why it's not a real big vacation area. You know, it's like, well, we can go down and we can see the boats, which is somewhat interesting.
Oh, I don't know. Once upon a time.
When you're young, it is.
Well, but, hey, 21 and over, There ain't nothing like the Florabama Lounge right there on the Alabama-Florida border. And the annual, the
open the door and wait for the smell of sulfur to come in the wind in the door.
You know, those white sand beaches are beautiful. And they extend all the way down the panhandle of Florida and down the West Coast. You know, Guy James talks about the beautiful beaches there where he is, and there's a lot of gorgeous stuff there, massively overdeveloped, but gorgeous stuff. And you know, to be there for the annual annual mullet toss at the Florabama is to experience something unlike anything else going anywhere else. Agnes recently found my Florabama Lounge T-shirt somewhere, and I was just tickled pink to get my hands on it again.
But, you know, it's on this thing. You know, it's like, say, it'll be amazing what the Democrats will give up. I mean, you know, you heard today where, well, the Republicans, well, says they'll give in a little bit on the compensation package. Oh, really? I'm sure they'll want the no criminal investigation part to keep Nathan alive. You know, there's so many little things stuck, like you said, there's so many little things they'll have stuck in there. It's like the Patriot Act. Oh, you signed this? You signed for this? You put your name on something to let them do this?
And see,
I didn't know.
Yeah, well, see, look, even the best of intentions get corrupted when Repiglicans get their hands on it. I did a little research on 401ks.
Oh, gosh.
You know what? Do you know when they got started? The legislation that ultimately wound up, herding folks into the stock market with things like with 401ks, that was born in 1978 during the Carter administration, and it was a very simple legislative attempt to resolve a conflict of laws in the tax code. The Repiglicans saw it, however, and the next thing you know, hey, welcome to the craps table. Ah, darn, you were old snake eyes. Too bad for you.
You know, it's like I say, the one thing that I don't think they're pushing enough right now is, you know, well, folks, how would you have liked it if you all had all that nice Social Security money stuck in the stock market like the Bush plan wanted you to do 5 years ago?
Exactly.
How many of you all would now be sitting going, well, I guess we can take some stuff with us and wait for the sheriff to come out and say, you can't touch that. That ain't yours no more. You know, it's like, hey, because they were, you know, five, six years ago, remember, the Republicans were just so gung-ho, oh, we have to put this in the stock market. So the stock market, because it makes money hand over fist.
You've seen National Lampoon's Las Vegas Vacation, right?
Oh, yes.
You remember all those wonderful scenes with Wallace Shawn as the croupier and Chevy Chase? I'm sorry, sir. I'm sorry, sir. And that's all. I'm sorry, sir.
First thing you do is shoot Randy Quaid. But other than that, you know,
yeah. Uncle Daddy.
I like the one there where they went over and then had when Quaid came over to the other games. You know, rock paper scissors. Come on, we're you know, just all the kids games. You know, it's like God. And of course, there's the son winning a car after car after car.
Mr. Papa Giorgio.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Wallace Shawn with that face.
Hang dog.
Yeah. I'm sorry, sir. And that's why, you know, and to, yeah.
Well, if you wanted to hear what was the character? You remember the wacky races? You remember Muttley?
Oh, yeah.
That's what you wanted to hear is just sort of the.
Right.
But, you know, it's like I said, that's what tonight is going to be. Like you say, like we said, you know, this is going to be the Patriot Act part 3 or 4 where, oh, you can't, like you said, you can't take time to read this. You have to vote on this right now or our country is going to die. I mean, that's all this is welcome to, you have nothing to fear but fear. And here's some more of it.
Eat it and smile. Who had an album by that name? Wasn't that Van Halen? Eat it and smile. Yeah.
The place I know good on memory on that, but I'm sorry.
No worries.
But you know what I mean? It's one of those things. It's like some people seem to forget, you know, just remember, folks, this is the party of Enron we're talking about. These are the people, welcome to the party of the Silverado. I mean, people who were giving away $200 million loans on a handshake. And amazingly enough, we didn't bother to, you know, most people don't remember the fact that dear old Neil gave a $200 million loan to his partner.
Yeah, you only get that handshake if you get the right kind of hand.
I know, but you know what I mean? It's amazing, like, you know, it's like we talked about the other night. I said every time that somebody starts talking about deregulation, I want a picture of Phil Gray and put on the TV camera. So just remember, here he is, folks.
Yeah, I mean, the bill had his name on it. Susan reminded us of that earlier. Yeah, exactly, exactly.
I want a group picture someday of him and Norquist and from the Family Association. I just want to see the group picture sometime, and we're just sitting there and going, and hopefully one day we're going to see these boys at Leavenworth.
Jim DeMented, who's worried about the bailout because it's socialism.
Oh, yeah. It's like, isn't it amazing how when a Republican does it, well, it's not socialism then, it's saving America.
Right, but he, you know.
If a Democrat said the same thing, we'd be hearing how it was the greatest socialist takeover in the world.
I suspect they will go ahead with this bailout, Luke, one way or the other. I mean, that's the way it at least looks right now. But I want at least some mental, I want some emotional satisfaction. I want all those, I want to get, remember how all the members of Congress on September 11th or whenever it was stood out on the Capitol steps and sang the national anthem in America, the Beautiful Land. I want all the Wall Streeters who are getting their bacon saved, I want them to stand smack dab in front of the stock exchange, and I want them to sing the Internationale.
Oh, no, money for nothing.
Well, there's that, too. But I was, you know, I was thinking more in terms of the international communist anthem, the international.
I know. Well, actually, I want them to do the Van Halen hits, as you said. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, it's like I say, it's just amazing to sit here, and you know what I mean? It's oh, God. You were talking a minute ago. I flipped the channel here. I'm sorry. Yeah, isn't it amazing to watch Orla Campbell Brown now all of a sudden find her voice because she's got O'Reilly on one side, Oberman on the other side, and she's seeing her what do we call, I guess, her star dimming. It's like there ain't much left for her between the two of them going.
You know, I think she should just, she needs to adopt a theme song. And I was thinking maybe the Stuck in the Middle with You. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. You got to wonder what, you know, sometimes you have some of these people on, and like I say, I think the best one she did recently was that thing with Schmidt, you know, where she essentially said, you know, essentially sit there. And I really would like to see some people in the.
Oh, have you not heard the Palin editorial yet?
Oh no, not. But wait, one thing I do want to hear somebody like Campbell Brown say when she's talking to somebody like this guy Smith. Look at him say, "You're a liar." I want to hear that word liar occasionally.
Yeah, I think we're getting pretty close to it.
Well, what you were saying about Palin editorial, I'm sorry.
You said the best thing she did was with Schmidt. Well, this Palin editorial is pretty tasty in its own right. Where she just, you know, dropped the hammer. Absolutely dropped the hammer on.
Where she went on off on that. I think the Schmidt thing kind of kicked her in the shins. You know, it's like the guy sit there and essentially tried to make her into the villain. And it's like, look, I didn't do anything that that anybody else had used to. You said she made hundreds of decisions, you know, as the head of the Alaska National Guard. Fine, tell me one. It's like, I'm sorry, if you can't tell one, then don't come on there and cry that she's done hundreds of decisions.
Yeah, for those who haven't heard it, let's just run through it real quick.
Okay. Well,
here we go.
For a short rant on another subject, because frankly, I have had it, and I know a lot of other women out there are with me on this. I have had enough of the sexist treatment of Sarah Palin. It has to end. She was here in New York City today meeting with world leaders at the UN. And what did the McCain campaign do? They tried to ban reporters from covering those meetings, and they did ban reporters from asking Governor Palin any questions. Tonight, I call on the McCain campaign to stop treating Sarah Palin like she is a delicate flower that will wilt at any moment. This woman is from Alaska, for crying out loud. She is strong, she is tough, she is confident, and you claim she's ready to be one heartbeat away from the presidency. If that is the case, then end this chauvinistic treatment of her now. Allow her to show her stuff. Allow her to face down those pesky reporters just like Barack Obama did today, just like John McCain did today, just like Joe Biden has done on numerous occasions. Let her have a real news conference with real questions. By treating Sarah Palin different from the other candidates in this race, you're not showing her the respect she deserves. Free Sarah Palin. Free her from the chauvinistic chains you are binding her with. Sexism in this campaign must come to an end. Sarah Palin has just as much a right to be a real candidate in this race as the men do. So let her act like one.
Oh, there's Eat It and Smile.
Well, you know, the one thing that they were saying the other day was they said, well, she's been at these town hall meetings. I noticed the mainstream media doesn't mention the fact that at these town hall meetings, if you show up with a sign, they take it away from you and give you a sign to hold. You can't use your own sign. They have one already printed up for you. You know, these town hall meetings, John McCain keeps crying, you know, oh, he won't come to face a town hall meeting. Yeah, well, if you could give some other people, make it an open town meeting instead of one where you invite the people you want in.
Right, because he did one of those at Saddleback Church, and we saw how that worked out.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not enough. These are not what we used to call open meetings. These are not open meetings. These are invitee meetings, only for the loyalist of the party to come down. So when he wants to say, well, I've had open town hall meetings, just remember what that means. That means as long as you give the Republican handshake and slip the 20 to somebody.
Exactly.
I mean, that's what their open town hall meetings are.
They're a fraud. They're a fake. They're dummied up. Sure they are.
I mean, you know, it's like, I remember, oh, God, this going way back. We had the meeting, had that thing one time where they had the senators going around. And they had a tape thing that from Robert Reich was sort of supposed to be the counter for it. And they had one down here at a high school here in town. We went down there, and it's like, well, you can't get in without a ticket. What? Well, you can't get in without a ticket. Where do we get the tickets? All from the Republican Party.
Oh,
you know,
nice.
That was a few years ago. That was just so nice.
Yeah. God.
Oh, well.
Never
well,
done.
I say,
don't worry. Marsha Blackburn's got it all under control, right?
Oh, didn't you like that? Oh. It's like, say, you know, she goes on these things because she's an attractive lady, and they love putting her on. And sometimes when she gets behind, she just starts screaming. And I don't mean scream and yell. I mean, she does the typical Republican thing. She filibusters. When she starts talking, she won't stop. If you've ever seen her on things, when she gets behind.
But she's an idiot.
An argument. Well, I know. But when she gets behind and she gets on the downside of an argument, she doesn't stop talking. She just keeps talking and won't let anybody else talk. And if they try to talk, she said, no, I'm still having my turn. You know what I mean? And she does the one of the favorite things the Republicans do is filibuster. Don't let anybody else have a chance to talk. And having said that, I'm going to hang up, let other people have a chance to talk.
Luke, you have a great night, all right?
You too.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Let's go to the email for just a couple of minutes. And then just tie a couple of things together. Let's see. First off, let me go back. Under the heading Weasel McCain, our buddy David, who is in Australia, said, I got to calm down here, Bob. Okay, today I cannot be, and you'll know David from the chat room. He goes by Angry Architect at headonradionetwork.com, the chat room there. Jump in sometime if you've never been. It's quite fun. Okay, I got to calm down here. Okay, today I cannot be Angry Architect. Today I'm a effing furious architect. I cannot accept a man that put himself up as a man of honor could possibly weasel out of a fight like canceling the debate 3 days early. I can't accept that, and neither should the American people. A man of honor would stand there and take his beating. And furthermore, if he was really a man of honor, he'd fight back. So good on Barack Obama for remaining in the ring. Now it's time for the commercial media to reverse this. As we know, they're mostly McCain fanboys and fangirls. However, a pullout on a presidential debate will lose them ratings, meaning loss of profits. Let's see what happens. Thanks, Angry Architect. And let's do get all these all tied together real nice and put a pretty little bow on it. Because I shared with you Larry's idea earlier for Barack saying, okay, that's fine. Me and John McCain, we'll go to Washington. I'm sending Joe Biden and John send Sarah Palin, and they'll do the debate in Oxford. It was brilliant, right? We all loved it. It was perfect. Guess what? Just got this in from David in South Carolina. I guess we were a little slow on the draw. From CNN correspondent Dana Bash. Oh, dear. McCain supporter Senator Lindsey Graham tells CNN the McCain campaign is proposing to the Presidential Debate Commission and the Obama camp that if there's no bailout deal by Friday, the first presidential debate should take the place of the vice presidential debate, you catching this, currently scheduled for next Thursday, October 2nd in St. Louis. In this scenario, the vice presidential debate between Joe Biden and Sarah Palin would be rescheduled for a date yet to be determined and take place in Oxford, Mississippi, currently slated to be the site of the first presidential debate Friday. Lindsey Graham says the McCain camp is well aware of the position of the Obama campaign and the debate commission because the Obama campaign and the debate commission both say the show must go on, that the debate should go on as planned, but both he and another senior McCain advisor insist the Republican nominee will not go to the debate Friday if there's no deal on the bailout. So once again, the classic Republican tactic and position of my way or the highway comes home to roost. Holy smoke. Of course, Sarah Palin said today, quote, Republican vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin said Wednesday that the United States could be headed for another Great Depression if Congress doesn't act on the financial crisis. Huh. Funny. I could have sworn that the Treasury Department and the Securities and Exchange Commission and everything having to do with regulation of the markets, I could have just sworn that that was part of the executive branch function. Then maybe I'm crazy. Maybe Dick Cheney redelegated and nobody was watching. This happened while she was visiting New York, and she said it during an interview with QC Couric. So glad that Guy James invented that name. That's just perfect. Yeah, if Congress doesn't act on the financial crisis. In other words, if we don't get our... So there's two examples. If we don't get our way, well, it's all your fault. We're going to leave, and it's going to be your fault. But, Lord, how many times... Baseball fans, how many times have you seen a deal, and the Mudville Nine will receive two draft choices and a player to be named later? Anything ever come of the player to be named later in those trade deals? So we're being asked to swallow that Joe Biden will debate Sarah Palin on a date to be named later. No, by God, no. It goes down now. And if John McCain doesn't show up, by God, I sincerely hope that Barack Obama is in Oxpatch, Mississippi on Friday evening because he is smart enough to do several things at one time. Or, seriously, it's not too late. The Obama camp can say, well, you know, okay, there's something here we can work with. Joe Biden and Sarah Palin go to Oxpatch on Friday and they debate. Because then you shift the momentum back, and the McCain campaign has to find another reason to run away. Because McCain, Barack Obama and I need to be in Washington attending to the business of the nation. Well, where's Sarah Palin need to be? Because there's not just a whole lot going on. No, you can be away. She's proven. You can be away from home in Alaska and not have Alaska just go up in flames. Because after all, she was, well, never mind, let's not go there. But, yeah, she's been away from home for a while. And it hasn't been a crisis so far, and the crisis has been ongoing, so why not? Joe Biden? Yeah, he's a senator. Oh, no, see, we can't do that because Joe Biden needs to be in Washington, too. Tell you what, John. Anybody who's ever watched C-SPAN knows that we recess a lot here in Congress. So during one of these recesses, if you absolutely insist on being in Washington, during one of these recesses, you and me will go out in the hall and will stand in front of the cameras and the assembled citizens of the United States, and the debate commission can send their host, and we'll do it in the hall. We'll do it live! At which point, John McCain will scream, "My friends, effing thing sucks." There is a way around this. There is a way to trump all this chicanery, all this tomfoolery, all this shameless, shameless strategery. There's a way to trump it. I hope to God somebody in the Obama campaign is half as smart as Larry was when he came up with the idea before it hit CNN. Dang. It's chess. You know, I saw an essay from Paul Waldman earlier today where he said, will the debates be any better than the ones that we had during the primary season? It's an open question. It's absolutely an open question. So there are other things actually going on in the world, and we'll examine them unless you want to ring up on the phone, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Take a little break. After 2.5 hours without one, I kind of need one. Don't know about you. Don't go away. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. We'll be right back.
On a warm summer's evening, on a train bound for nowhere, I met up with a gambler. We were both too tired to sleep, so we took turns staring out the window at the darkness. The boredom overtook us, and he began to speak. He said, "Son, I've made my life out of reading people's faces and knowing what the cards were by the way they held their eyes. So if you don't mind me saying, I can see you're out of aces. For a taste of your whiskey, I'll give you some advice." So I handed him my bottle, and he drank down my last swallow. Then he bummed a cigarette and asked me for a light. And the night got deathly quiet. His face lost all expression. Said, "If you're gonna play the game, boy, you gotta learn to play it right. You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done." Now every gambler knows the secret to surviving is knowing what to throw away, knowing what to keep. 'Cause every hand's a winner and every hand's a loser, and the best you can hope for is to die in your sleep. So when he'd finished speaking, he turned back toward the window, crushed out his cigarette, faded off to sleep. Then somewhere in the darkness, the gambler, he broke even. But in his final words, I found an ace that I could keep. You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the deal's done.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Was a Joe leaning on the back door, a couple Jills that had their eyes on a couple bills, and the eyes were stating they was waiting to get their hands on some easy money. They flip a dime once and well, I'll say heads this time. One step up, one step back, one loosened her shoulder strap. She couldn't speak. Her knees got weak. Oh, she could almost taste it. Easy money. There was this old black cow sending an old black Cadillac. And Joe smells sweet, so she curls up her boyfriend's feet. She says, I got a plan. Listen, Sam, how'd you like to make some of that easy money? Oh, you say yeah. Set the bait and she wasn't gonna sit around and wait. But this guy was wise to all of the lies, and he flies out the door with easy money. Oh, because there ain't no man who got the money in his hand, who got any of that bread by being slow in the head. The easier it looks, the harder it looks. There ain't no such thing.
Right, everybody relax. Solid is. Just easy money. Couldn't resist. Too easy. Between that and the gambler was just it. I couldn't choose between the two, so didn't want to just run them up back to back or anything. So put a couple of messages in there, and messages that need to be run out anyway. So it's about 20 minutes before the hour, and unless you've got, well, if you've got something on your mind, I hope we've heard from, if we haven't heard from everybody that wanted to be heard from, here's your chance. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. A couple more emails to hit. This in, didn't get to it earlier, sorry about that, but this in from Sophie. Finally, some of McCain's past is starting to catch up with him, with his campaign manager's dirt starting to surface. The fact that the guy was, well, you know the story already, I don't have to tell you. Just read McCain wants to postpone debates and suspend his campaign. What happens if a candidate this close to an election day suspends his campaign? What if he extends the suspension far into next month? What does Obama do? Just keep going? Think it's going to take more than a couple of days in Washington to get his campaign clear of this involvement with Wall Street and back on track, being McCain, that is. Just curious about what this possibilities this opens up. Thanks, Sophie. It's chess. It's chess. It's a chess game. And I don't think that the Rapig Lickens are any kind of Bobby Fischers. But I sincerely hope the Obama campaign will not play checkers. Same board, wildly different games. And I really like the, you know, you can trump. All of this brinksmanship and gamesmanship can be trumped. You know, tell John McCain, you know, we'll have breaks, we'll take the breaks, and, you know, I'm sure, you know, Harry Reid will make it possible. We can have the debate. There won't be any committee meetings Friday night. We'll do it in the rotunda of the Capitol. How fitting. We'll do it standing on our own two feet. Just put a couple of podiums out there and we'll go at it. How about it, John? For the American people, huh? Because, of course, Barack Obama is absolutely correct. This was his response to John McCain cutting and running.
Attending the debate on Friday, and is Senator McCain playing politics with this by saying he did not go to the debate?
Well, let me say this, just to go through the chronology today. I called him this morning with the intent of issuing a joint statement. I got called back around 2:30. We had a conversation. I made the suggestion to him. He agreed to that suggestion. He then suggested, in addition, that we need to have a meeting in Washington with the congressional leaders and potentially the president. And what I told him was, well, why don't we get the joint statement out first to enunciate principles that both of us agree to and to send a clear signal to the members of Congress that this, in fact, is something that should not be bogged down by partisan politics. Now, when I got back to the hotel, he had gone on television to announce what he intended to do. I believe that our staffs are still working on this joint statement. I think the important principle at this point is to send a clear signal to members of Congress, as well as the country, that this is a serious problem that has to be solved. Should not be subject to the usual partisan politics. With respect to the debates, it's my belief that this is exactly the time when the American people need to hear from the person who, in approximately 40 days, will be responsible for dealing with this mess. And I think that it is going to be part of the president's job to deal with more than one thing at once. I think there's no reason why we can't be constructive in helping to solve this problem and also tell the American people what we believe and where we stand and where we want to take the country. So in my mind, actually, it's more important than ever that we present ourselves to the American people and try to describe where we want to take the country and where we want to take the economy, as well as dealing with some of the issues of foreign policy that were initially the subject of the debate.
Sounds pretty sane and reasonable to me, doesn't it, you? because, look, the American people are being asked to buy a pig in a poke. Oh, did I just call Sarah Palin a pig? I hope not. I sincerely hope not. All we know so far is that Wall Street gets to keep its outrageous, sickening salaries. All we know is that the silk suit types, the Gatsbys, if you will, get to hang on to everything they've got, and they get it by taking away more of what little we have left. That's all we know at this point about George Bush's plan. Now, he's going to get in front of a microphone. I'm sure he'll be Xanaxed out of his mind in about 14 minutes. And we might know more. But we know precious little right now, and we've got to, George Bush is a cipher. Dick Cheney is a cipher. Karl Rove is cooking this business on the back from behind the curtain for John McCain. And really, one of these two people will be president. One of these two people will take the oath on January the 20th. And I know that our buddy Marty wrote in earlier in the program and said, "I want to see Barack Obama take the oath of office on the Constitution, not the Bible." Should he win the election? Me too. How would the right wing fundamentalist freakazoids deal with that? You know, they've been saying, "Oh, he's going to take the oath on the Koran." Nah, let's split the difference and take the oath on the Constitution. Yeah, I like that, Marty. I like that a lot. Marty says, "By the way, I'll support most of Congressman Kucinich's proposal if and only if they require that Boeing be separated from McDonnell Douglas, Lockheed Martin be separated. Needless to say, I favor making the Sherman Antitrust Act the 28th Amendment." Hell yeah. Absolutely. Thanks, Marty. So, in other parts of the world today, News Ninja Gene just sent this along. Lord God, I think Gene reads the entire internet every day. Nothing gets past him. Dateline from the Associated Press, Newburgh, Oregon. Little university called George Fox University. It is, of course, a Christian university. Well, on the campus of this Christian university was found... This is sickening. On the campus of this Christian university was found hanging by a noose from a tree, a cardboard cutout of Barack Obama. There was a message on it. It said, "Act 6, reject." Now that doesn't make a lot of sense to me, probably not to you either. But Act 6 turns out to be a scholarship program that is geared toward increasing ethnic diversity and economic diversity, in other words, low-income students and students of color, at several Christian institutions of so-called higher learning. Most of them are in the American Northwest. How very Christian of them. Dear God. Robin Baker is the president of George Fox University. Robin Baker said the custodian discovered the effigy early on Tuesday and removed it. Robin Baker said, Robin Baker's a guy. Tough with a name like Robin. Robin Baker said that he was disheartened and outraged. "It has been my dream to establish a university that more adequately represents the kingdom of God. This act causes some to question our commitment. What I've learned is that we still have work to do," he said. No, President Baker, it's not that you still have work to do. It is that you are working in a morally, ethically bankrupt, dead fraud that is the home to the single greatest concentration of racists and bigots remaining in this country. You see, the school has 17 students in the Act 6 program. 16 of them are members of minority groups. They're on full scholarship. They're selected based on their leadership potential. But of course, scratch any Christian sect, and you will find at some level bigotry and prejudice and hate. How do you suppose those 17 students feel? And using Barack Obama as the symbolic representation of their racism. It may seem like a short time to November the 4th, but in the hearts and souls of bigots and racists, it's a long, long time. And then down in Louisiana, there's Repig-Licking State Representative John Labruzzo. John Labruzzo comes from the same district that sent the Louisiana State House David Duke. Well, you know where this is going then, don't you? John Labruzzo wants to offer poor women $1,000 to have their tubes tied because he's afraid, and this is a quote, that they're reproducing at a faster rate than more affluent, better educated residents. $1,000 to make sure that there aren't any, you know, there aren't so many of those kind of babies being born. But he's a right winger, pro-life, culture life. As long as it's the right color life. Kind of reminds me of Bingo Billy Bennett. Well, you know, if you want to stop crime in America, you just abort all the black babies. Whew. Wow. Of course, Labruzzo has a racist history. This is a quote. The black community will say this is some sort of race-based genocide. And there will be tremendous pushback from the ACLU. They'll try to say these people are incapable of making such a decision where their life is in turmoil. That if you're dangling money in front of them, of course they'll make a decision that will affect them negatively. My argument would be if they're incapable of making a decision whether to cease reproduction, are they capable of raising multiple children to be good citizens? And if they're incapable, maybe social services should take their children. But, you know, hateful as it is to say it, there may be a core of a good, there may be a kernel of a good idea in Representative Labruzzo's theory. Now, he wants to give poor folks $1,000 to make sure they don't reproduce. Meanwhile, we're going to give $700 billion to the Wall Street bankers, and we're not going to ask a damn thing of them. I say we nut them after we write the check. Pick it, boys. You want the money, or you want the boys? Your call. Money, or just line right up over here. We got a fellow with a rusty scalpel just waiting on you. You see, we're afraid that you greed-infested Wall Street pigs might reproduce because we've been shown that you have no moral center, no ethics, no conscience, and we want to make sure that you don't hand those sociopathic genes down to the next generation. Got your check. Come and get it. Oh, first time in the stirrups for you, is it, son? That's all right. It'll be your last. Don't worry. It don't hurt too much. Just a little snip, snip, and you're done. We'll staunch the bleeding with a white hot poker out of that fire over there. Want the money? See me dangling the check. Want the money? Come get the money. All you got to do is promise not to put any more of your little filthy spawn into the gene pool. So, you know, thanks to... He's got the wrong sector of society. Representative John Labruzzo does. But he's got a damned fine idea. He's got a darn fine idea. So that's the program for tonight. Thanks, everybody. What a great round of conversation we had this prayer meeting evening. And I've got an announcement. And it grieves me to make it. But we're saying goodbye to another program. We're saying goodbye to another show here on the Horn. I got an email from the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio host this morning, Peter Godbold. And Peter is hanging up his dancing shoes. Going to get out of the talk radio hosting business. Oh, he will still be the world's most fabulous LGBT IT professional, rest assured, and I'm sure we'll hear from him from time to time. But considering all the connectivity problems he's had, and some health issues, and a work schedule that is absolutely insane, 13 months is a pretty damn good run in my book. And I don't know if he's listening or not, but I want Peter Godbold to know that it has been an honor and a pleasure to be behind this board for every hour that I have been. And I'm sure I can speak certainly for Agnes in saying that it has been the same for her. So thank you, Peter Godbold. There will be more people sad out of this than I think perhaps you knew. But it is certainly understandable. Because this is tough business. This is very hard. It sounds easy. It isn't. The day-to-day grind of... we talked about it before. The day-to-day grind of crawling in behind the microphone is really tough. It is excruciating sometimes. I, for one, will miss the daily interaction with Peter Godbold. Because he has been... he's been in many ways like the big brother I never had. And I love him dearly. And I understand. I understand what a monster trying to do something like this can be. So like I said, I hope we will one way or the other, we'll continue to hear from Peter. And like I said, he'll continue to be behind the scenes. But on the air and behind the microphone, I will miss his laugh. I will miss his wit. And I will miss, I think most of all, his capacity to channel his sorrow and speak for those who so often are rendered voiceless in a society that is still rife with profound levels of bigotry. So thank you for everything you've done in the last 13 months, Peter Godbold. I speak for the whole audience when I say we love you. Thanks also this evening go to John Fox, our chief engineer, and to the hardest working man in liberal talk, Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks go to all of our friends, the hardest working, bravest people I know, our friends at Coal River Mountain Watch. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.